afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Tuesday afternoon from the InfoWars headquarters here in Austin, Texas. It is Tuesday, the 14th of October, and we have a lot to talk about. We're going to be talking, of course, quite a bit about what's going on with InfoWars. The fact that the Supreme Court has denied even looking at our case. Fairly upsetting type of thing that when you hear about it, I'm like, I guess I'll go no holds barred today. I guess we have nothing to lose anymore. I'm extremely, you could say, supremely disappointed in the decision that was made, and I'll explain why. And I think I need to really get into exactly what happened with the case against Alex Jones. We mentioned it here or there, but I think I need to show you. I think I need to actually break it down fully for you all. So I've done some research in that regard. But earlier today, Brianna Morello, host of American Journal, had on Steve Deese, clip number 24 here. And I thought he made a very salient point about the Supreme Court's decision and the stupidity of it, really, at the end of the day. Here's Steve Deese on American Journal this morning.
If I had an audience with John Roberts, here's what I would say to him as to why they should absolutely take this case. You should take it, John, if you believe Alex Jones actually is exactly who you claim he is and fear that he is. That's exactly why you should take the case. If he is a gaslighter, the guy yelling fire in a crowded theater and proves that a blind, squirrel can find an acorn every now and then. If you say enough wrong things and predict enough bad things about government, eventually they'll prove you to be true because human nature is not basically good. And, government is the greatest example of that. If you're right about that, John, that's exactly why you should take the case. Because by not taking the case, you're allowing Alex's audience to continue to have suspicion of your institutions. And you're an institutionalist, John. You've made that very clear, both in your writings as a chief justice, in the public remarks you have given. You view yourself as the last vanguard of American institutionalism. You are standing a post there to defend America's institutions. You've made that very clear. That's the guiding light of your legal philosophy. Well, if that is the case, to then not take up the case of maybe the best known challenger of America's institutions. I would think if you think that this thing is a deadlock cinch and they did it right, then John Roberts, here's your opportunity to bury Alex Jones then. Why would you not take that opportunity and instead allow him, according to the way you see things, to feed his own massive audience of more and more suspicions because of your unwillingness to hear his case? I would actually take it to John Roberts and use his own worldview, Brianna, his own perspective against him, and use that to be the reason why, frankly, he should take the case. If he thinks that Alex Jones is exactly what he believes that he is, then that's all the reason to take the case. Let's have it out in the open and let's prove it to everybody once and for all within the hallowed halls of the U.S. Supreme Court.
So there you go. Of course, we were refused a Supreme Court hearing, just like we were refused a hearing when they were doing all of these congressional hearings about censorship online. For some reason, people who had never been censored were welcomed onto the floor of the Senate to give their testimony. Alex Jones was all but forcibly removed from the Senate chambers when he tried to go and actually have a place in the proceedings that mentioned him over and over, but didn't actually allow him to speak for himself. Instead, you had people like Ben Shapiro being welcomed to D.C., never been censored, never been kicked off a platform, never had his accounts deleted, never been debanked, never been sued for $1.4 billion, but they get a spot at the table while InfoWars is, we don't even get the crumbs. I mean, we're just under the table being kicked at this point. We'll get more into this and explain how this isn't even about InfoWars. We've said it over and over. Now you're seeing it come to fruition. Mike Lindell is the next victim of this. And if you don't think this is a big deal, folks, how would you defend against it? How would you defend against it? You don't have to have done anything wrong. How would you defend against it if somebody came up with a opinion you expressed 10 years ago and then stole your business, everything you've ever worked for, bankrupted you, and tried to send you to jail, and the judge went along with it? I'll explain it all on the other side.
Alex Jones, patriot. A man they tried to silence. They came for his voice, his platform, his life. But they can't stop him. Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology, We have the capability to make the world's most unstoppable force. Alex Jones will be that man. Better than he was before. Better. Stronger. Faster. Louder.
Go to alexjonesapp.com, the number one news app in the world.
Yes!
Peeling back the layers of the day's events to reveal the core truth. War Room with Harrison Smith.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room, InfoWars.com, band.video. For now, we're still at InfoWars.com and band.video, but the Supreme Court decision today may put that whole operation in jeopardy, this whole operation in jeopardy. But of course, no matter what happens, you can support us at thealexjonesstore.com. Thealexjonesstore.com will power us into the future, regardless of any decisions by any men wearing robes. So please do support us at thealexjonesstore.com. And hey, folks, it might be, it almost certainly is one of your last chances to get InfoWars merch, official, legitimate InfoWars merch, before that'll be owned by The Onion or some other godforsaken spawn of hell. So make sure to go now. Support the good guys at thealexjonesstore.com. And I sort of vacillate between extreme outrage and just like crippling depression when it comes to this type of stuff. And it's one or the other. It's either a fury at what has happened and a sort of almost petulant desire to just destroy things for the sake of destruction, just to satisfy the base need of, you know, expressing the frustration that we feel. And then just this overwhelming burden of knowledge of just how screwed our entire system is, just how fully and completely contained we are. It is so frustrating. And we're seeing more and more sort of examples of this. And it makes me feel like we need a purge. Like, I'm looking around for a solution to this problem. And I really don't have one. We've got multiple stories today, you know, sort of aligned with what's happening with InfoWars and the Supreme Court. You've got people like Todd Blanche seemingly obstructing everything Trump wants to do. How this guy got appointed to this position, why he's allowed to do this, how the Trump administration isn't aware of the way that he's undercutting them. It baffles me. I have no idea. And so you've got these examples, people like Todd Blanche, but there's a lot under him. A prosecutor for the Eastern District of Virginia was fired today, along with the one that was fired a few weeks ago because he refused to charge James Comey because he was actually family friends with James Comey. Remember, that was the prosecutor that for 9 months slow walked the prosecution of Jim Comey, who refused to file anything, who had all these excuses as to why, well, I'm just not sure this would work. And it turns out that guy, his father-in-law, was the godfather of Comey's daughter. She's like, that's as close as you can get without being familial. It's all like he practically adopted James Comey's daughter. So you've got this guy with a personal attachment to James Comey who is obviously deliberately avoiding fulfilling the law, doing his job. And the way that you know it's deliberate is because in 5 days, Trump put his own personal attorney in and she got a conviction, or she got an indictment rather, in 5 days. So you're telling me the career prosecutor, who's, this is his job, this is what he's supposed to do, he can't get it done for 9 months, but the personal lawyer of Donald Trump, who's never done this before, gets an indictment in 5 days? That's not possible if it's not willful. There's no way this guy was incapable of getting the indictment. He chose not to. And so it's not just Todd Blanche. Under him, there's all these other little operatives, and we know this about the deep state. This is what the deep state is. That's what we're describing. Sort of independent actors inside the federal government working on their own behalf towards their own ends. completely ignoring the demands of the voters who are supposed to be in charge of the government at large. But it's not just the government either. X right now is embroiled in a pretty big scandal, a pretty big controversy, because one of the trusted health and safety community members of X is just a violent anti-American leftist who's deleting right-wingers' accounts. And is the handle on X is like Arabic for America must die. It's crazy. And so it's like, how is there one in every organization? How is it that in every single organization in America, there's at least one leftist with an insane power trip, with an insane position, with incredible authority that uses that authority politically towards their own ends to harm people that don't deserve it? And they just get away with it forever. And even when you fire that person, it turns out there's like 20 more behind him ready to pick up the torch. So it's like, do we just need an ideological purge in America? Because how do we deal with this? How do we deal with this? And why does it take so long for these things to be found out and then dealt with and corrected? Why is Todd Blanche still there? What is he doing? Everybody in the know says he's the reason nothing's getting done. How is it that he's not fired yet? I mean, it's just, it goes on and on and on. And so it's like we're sandwiched between these two realities of most of our major institutions in America are top down, fully controlled by the left. Universities, government programs, industries, like, you know, businesses, corporations. They're all downstream from BlackRock. They're all downstream of the globalists. So there's this institutional control that they wield with abandon that just means everything is rigged against us all the time in the most egregious ways. And then on the other side, even when you do have an institution that at least in some part is trying to do the right thing, you've got individuals inside that institution that stop it from doing anything effective constantly. So what do we do about that? I mean, we need a purge. And, you know, we said this when Elon Musk first took over X, or, you know, was enforcing free speech and all this stuff. It's like, okay, on one hand, it's great having these individuals. It's great having these guys like Elon Musk or Donald Trump that can break the mold, that still understand and truly believe in what makes the West great and America great and, you know, fulfill that mission. But like, we can't rely on that. We can't rely on just getting lucky that the richest guy in the world just happens to be on our side here, and then rely on him exclusively to try to keep everybody else in line. Like, we have a real problem here. We have a real institutional issue in America, and we cannot rely on, and we should not have to rely on, singular men like Alex Jones or Elon Musk or Donald Trump to you know, buck the trend, to take the correct positions, and then be punished relentlessly for it. Where is the systematic backing for them? And we can't even get it from people that we've sacrificed ourselves for. Nobody in America did more to elect Donald Trump than Alex Jones. Absolutely nobody. Nobody has paid a higher price for supporting Donald Trump than Alex Jones. We can't get anything. We can't get anything. We can't get a nod, a wink, an interview. We can't get an intervention by the DOJ. It just doesn't happen. Just doesn't happen for us. And it's unfair. And I know, you know, Alex sort of just understands this and rolls with it. But no, I'm pissed off. I'm pissed off at this. I'm pissed off at not just the lack of gratitude, not just the disloyalty that we constantly experience from the people that we give our lives to, but also the stupidity, also the blindness to how this is being perceived by a massive number of Americans. Because when you allow Alex Jones to be destroyed like this, think about all of the problems that this causes. It's not just that Alex Jones gets destroyed. One of your, you know, greatest supporters just has his life eviscerated by your enemies and you do nothing to stop it. Like, okay, there's that. There's also the precedent it sets is now being used on people like Mike Lindell. And I asked at the end of the last segment, let me expand on it. How would you react to it? How would you defend yourself against something like this? You say an opinion, 10 years later, the FBI gets together with the top lawyers in America to sue you for that opinion 10 years ago. A judge demands material that doesn't exist, issues a default judgment against you, declares you guilty, and then sends you to a so-called jury trial whose only purpose is deciding how many billions of dollars you owe. And then that's it. That's it. Your house, your guns, your jewelry, your antiques, your children's inheritance. Gobbled up. You're spending years and years having everything in your life exposed to the public. They're leaking material that they get from discovery to humiliate you. What would you do to defend yourself against that? It's a trick question because there's nothing you can do. There's nothing you can do. The only thing you could do is shut up and never say anything. But if you've ever said anything and somebody wants to sue you for it, it doesn't matter how legitimate the claim is. It doesn't matter how offensive the statement was. None of that matters. All that matters is they get the right judge who already has, is already predisposed to hating the defendant, who already is out to destroy the defendant, and then can just say, oh, you don't like this guy? He said something about you? $1.5 billion, please, will be garnishing your wages for the rest of your life. Everything you've built over 30 years belongs to these people now, and you have no right to defend yourself. And even when we make you go and testify in a fake trial to a jury who has already been instructed to find you guilty, we're going to say you can't even reference the First Amendment. You can't even reference it. You cannot defend yourself. You have to get up there and take it in this struggle session in which they get to say whatever the hell they want about you, but your testimony is highly controlled, highly restricted. How would you defend yourself against that? You literally cannot. That is the point. They have stripped American citizens of their right to defend themselves in court. You can have judges, biased judges with a predetermined outcome for a trial, simply declare that you are guilty and you never get to defend yourself. You never get to put an argument on. Same thing that happened with the January 6th fake show trial. They called up, you know, witnesses on the prosecution side, but the defendants weren't even allowed in the courtroom. This is the wholesale destruction of our judiciary happening in real time, and nobody is doing anything to stop it. This is the judge that you're seeing on screen right now. A far leftist, literally blue-haired Antifa member who was out to get Alex Jones from the beginning. And all the judges are like that. And there are probably 10,000 judges in America with this exact mindset, with this exact political bent. Who's going to be next? What corporation could survive this? Literally none of them. Is Fox News next? And I don't think for a single second that a place like CNN or the New York Times will ever be subject to something like this. It's only for the dissidents. It's only for the people that aren't controlled. It's only for the people who actually tell the truth. I'm telling you, I've got clips to illustrate this from the trial of Sandy Hook, and I want to keep talking about this because it's not about us, but we know more about it than anybody else. And it is a precedent they are setting. That again, it's like if you can't see it, I don't know if I can explain it to you. If you can't see how wrong it is to allow an FBI agent to go to a high-powered Washington, D.C. law firm, say 10 years ago, this guy said something that, by the way, was like an incredibly way. He was reporting on the most popular topic on the internet at the time, Sandy Hook. Sandy Hook conspiracy was the most popular conspiracy for years. Years. He comments on it. They say it was all him. The FBI gets together with these high-powered law firms. They find a judge. They demand discovery that doesn't exist. And I'll illustrate this. I'll walk you through exactly what they demanded, what was given, the precedence of how this has happened in the past. This doesn't happen. This doesn't happen, folks. I was trying to get answers about this to AI. It couldn't even understand what I was saying because this doesn't happen. I'm going, tell me of high profile default judgments. And AI is returning to me like, there's no such thing as high profile default. No, default judgments are like typically in divorce cases where one party just flees the country. That's a default judgment. Okay, a case where you serve the defendant, they get the order to appear in court, they ignore it, you can't contact them for 3 months, default judgment. Small scale, small, you know, claims type of stuff. This does not happen with big corporations. It's not supposed to. That's not how the law was written. It's not what it's meant for. And the way it was enacted here, it could be enacted for anybody. For anybody. I'll show you. I mean, it gets to... Folks, you don't understand the level it gets to. Do you want to know one of, if not the official reason that our judgment was defaulted? Is because when we sent all of the information they requested, we like didn't include one of the people in the CC chain, in the carbon copy chain of the email. And it's like, well, it's like a minor clerical error. We sent it to 15 people, but one of them wasn't on the list, as if it wouldn't be a matter of the ultimate simplicity to just hit forward or say, oh, you forgot Jim. Oh, let me add him in. That's why we were defaulted. Not because we didn't provide things, not because we were withholding things, not because we refused to answer summons and refused to answer communications from the court, because the information we supplied was supplied to everybody except for like one person that I'm not even sure who they are. I'll show you. I'll get into it. If you haven't looked into this, you have no idea how corrupt this entire situation was. And now that we're, you know, not the Supreme Court, I'm just going to talk about all of it in exactly the way that I feel about it. So there's no reason why Fox News couldn't be subject to this. There's no reason why literally any organization couldn't be subject. Is there any organization in the world that could survive a $1.4 billion judgment against them? I guess like Apple, maybe, you know, I guess, you know, some of these big multinational corporations. But this is just, they have now officially, because the Supreme Court has denied to even see this case, to even look at this incredibly impactful First Amendment case, the left now has the ultimate blueprint. I guarantee you today, there are meetings in law firms in Washington, D.C., and New York, and L.A., and Miami, where they're getting together and going, okay, well, this works, so who do we go after next? Who can we get on the tablet next? Could be anybody. And it's a simple matter. You look through 10 years of publications from a person in the media, you find somebody they said something about at some point, could be true, could be false, doesn't matter. You contact that person. Hey, you want to destroy Glenn Beck? Hey, you want to take out Tucker Carlson, silence him forever, put him through hell for 2.5 years, rob his children of their inheritance, steal his home and his cars, and then, you know, make it to where he can never work again, or if he does, we get all the money. You want to do that? Well, he insulted you 12 years ago. You want to sign on to my law firm? Doesn't cost you anything. I've got, you know, people putting in tens of millions of dollars pro bono for us. You just sign on. We know a judge in this particular district. We give it to her. She makes demands of Tucker Carlson that he literally cannot meet. Even if he meets them, she says not good enough. Default judgment. Bing, bang, boom. He's destroyed. His life is destroyed judicially. And he has no possible way of combating that whatsoever. Alex Jones, watches, truck, rental property pitched for auction. They've taken everything. The only thing they can't take, because Texas has restrictions, they can't take your primary residence or your car. That's it. You know what? Even if the Supreme Court had seen our case and decided on our side, it still wouldn't give us back the 3 years we've been under this. Still wouldn't give us back the millions of dollars we've had to spend on this. Still wouldn't make up for everything that we've been unable to do because we've had to focus on this so much. So, I mean, it's devastating for a number of reasons, but in particular, and like the reason I would pitch to somebody like Trump or anybody else in the Republican Party, this is sending a very clear signal to everybody else in America. To the leftists, it's sending a signal that, you know, this is a way forward. This is a path to destroy your enemies legally. You can get the courts along with it. You barely have to do anything. That's the signal they're getting. To normies, they're getting the signal, well, Alex Jones must have deserved it. They must have been right about, you know, the lawsuit. because they're, you know, they're not really paying attention anyway, but they're going to see the headline. Oh, okay. So he lost to the Supreme Court. He must have really been a bad guy. So I'll just contribute to the, you know, hatred and outrage we face on a continual basis, though we deserve none of it. But to the right wingers, people on the right, what you're showing them is that there's no point in trying to win this politically. There's no point. Because what are you going to do? You're going to sacrifice your own reputation. You're going to sacrifice everything to get a guy elected. And then you get just nothing in return. Not that we want anything special from Trump. Tucker Carlson, you know, said this very well in the interview with Alex yesterday. And I'm going to show a clip from that in the next segment. A pretty extended clip that talks all about this and about the danger this poses to everybody. You know, he said, it's not that you want something, you know, a special gift, a reward for your support. But if a politician can't bring justice to their constituents, then what is the point of them? And I can't tell you how many comments I've gotten on X since this news broke of people saying something along the lines of, yeah, Trump doesn't care about you if you're not a Jewish billionaire. If you're not a billionaire who's actively like blackmailing Trump, you just don't get anything from him. You don't matter to him. You know, he got what he wanted from you. He got elected. You supported him while he got elected. Now that he's in office, F you. Are they wrong? Doesn't seem like it. Doesn't feel like it. So that's the thing I don't understand. And it's the same thing that I keep going over with all of these people and all of these situations is it's like, okay, you know, maybe you don't care about Alex Jones. Maybe you don't like Alex Jones. Do you care about the millions and millions of people for whom this will be a final straw? Who, despite supporting you in this vain hope that something might change in America, this is now a blaring signal to them saying, you get nothing from us. All of your support, we take for granted. All the sacrifices you made, we don't give a damn about. Why would anybody go out on a limb for you ever again? Why would anybody defend you ever again? For your own political ambitions, for your own ego. If nothing else, your own ambitions are going to be harmed by the way that you treat the people that support you. So it's like, what is the countervailing force? Why are they not doing this? Who is pulling the strings? Who is making these decisions that are so catastrophically damaging to the entire Make America Great Again movement? The Supreme Court justices, they wouldn't be there without Trump, and Trump wouldn't be there without Alex Jones. Trump has appointed 3 Supreme Court justices. None of them can speak up for Trump's most visible proponent and the person most punished for that support. We should get nothing from anybody. And that really is a problem, and I don't know how to fix it. This all should be obvious to anybody that's paying attention. But somehow, they get people in these positions that are able to wreck everything and they don't get fired. It's nuts.
You're not going to talk to me.
Fraud
and talk and over me.
New York residents
because you don't
want
to hear what I have to say.
Oh, I'm listening.
So why don't
Go
you
ahead.
Just keep your mouth shut?
I've been on air for 31 years, but 28 years ago I launched InfoWars, and it's changed the world thanks to all of your support of the operation. People like Hakeem Jeffries want us to shut up.
Can you like shut up?
That's what all their lawfare, all their lawsuits, all their attacks have been about, and they're passing anti-free speech laws in Canada, the UK, Europe. They're arresting people for even criticizing the government, and they're trying to bring that here. And that's why it's so important to try to keep InfoWars on the air. But regardless, these will be taken off very, very soon. We're going to continue on in the fight. But going forward, we'll no longer be called InfoWars. That's why it's so important now, which could be your last chance, to get all of the great shirts, ball caps, hoodies, sweaters, you name it, that have InfoWars on it. The classic designs, and some of the new designs. That's why we're launching the InfoWars Veteran Edition, or Veterans of the InfoWar. All of you that supported the InfoWar, you are the InfoWar. You are the modern Paul Revere's. You're the reason we're having this massive success here in the United States and around the world. You're the reason the globalists are desperate and admit their entire system is collapsing down around them. We're winning major battles, but we've not yet won the main war. And I have been proud to fight with you over these decades. I am so blessed and satisfied by the incredible effect we've all had together. So to celebrate 28 years of the InfoWar, 1997 to 2025, which could be the end of this incarnation of it, but I hope we go on. And regardless, the InfoWar never dies. It belongs to the people. It's the term for information warfare. They use lies. We use truth. But the URL and this building and all of that goes away, and it's like rocket engines, boosters falling off as the main craft goes into escape velocity and orbit. As John Paul Jones famously said, the founder of the U.S. Navy, I have not yet begun to fight. But it is important to get original InfoWars gear while you still can. All the classic designs and the new Veterans of the InfoWar designs that are limited edition and help keep this operation on the air and fund the new Alex Jones network that's being built. We've already seen some of the studios, the great work the crew's been doing, but it's much more expansive than what you've seen, and that'll be revealed very, very soon, and that's thanks to all of your support. So when you go to the alexjonesstore.com, you will have access to the widest selection, over 500 designs of Patriot t-shirts, ball caps, hoodies, sweaters, you name it. And all of the t-shirts are $19.97 in honor of the year that I launched InfoWars.com itself. So again, thank you all for your support. And there's more.
But wait, there's more!
With promo code Hakeem at checkout, because he wants us all to shut up, and we're not going to shut up, get an additional 10% off right now. That's promo code Hakeem. Use it now.
Oh, I'm listening.
So why don't you just keep your mouth shut?
Hakeem Jeffries hopes you shut up. Hakeem Jeffries hopes you don't help keep us on the air, because then he can continue his tyrannical activity. That's why it's a revolutionary act when you support this operation and wear the Patriot apparel, available right now at thealexjonesstore.com, celebrating 28 years of the InfoWar. Thanks for keeping us on the air. And Hakeem, we've just begun to fight. We're not going to shut up.
Bigotry will get you nowhere. We are fighting to protect the health care of the American people in the face of an unprecedented Republican assault.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Folks, this is the War Room, talking about the fact the Supreme Court has denied the appeal of InfoWars and Alex Jones, or denied to even see the appeal. Supreme Court on Tuesday declined to review an appeal from Alex Jones, a conspiracy theorist and founder of InfoWars, leaving in place a lower court judge's order that he pay $1.4 billion in damages to some of the families who lost children in a 2012 shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, and an FBI agent they forgot to mention. Alex Jones talked about this with Tucker Carlson yesterday. I want to go to that clip now. It's about 5 minutes long, and we'll go ahead and play the whole thing, because I think it's important to, you know, illustrate exactly how this will be used into the future. And guys, my computer is on the fritz here, so I can't even see which number it is. But it's the 5 minute one with Alex Jones. 18. Yes, Todd Blanche is endorsing Democrat lawfare attacks against Trump supporters by stonewalling investigations into state court defaulting cases. And again, this started with Alex Jones. We told you this would be a blueprint. It's now moved on to Mike Lindell. God only knows who's going to be next, but they have now completed construction of a Death Star that can just eradicate conservative organizations, and there's nothing they can do about it. You don't have a right to defend yourself. Doesn't matter what evidence you present. They'll say it's not worth it. Default judgment. jury trial declares how guilty you are. You're already guilty, just how much you'll pay. And they'll destroy your company and your life that way. Okay. I guess this is the new standard. Here's Alex Jones and Todd Carlson discussing it yesterday.
Is Todd Blanche Bill Barr 2.0? That's the question Trump should be asking. It's bigger than me. It's bigger than me. When the Justice Department reached out and said, hey, this is cut and dry with you, I said, don't you have bigger fish fry? They said, no, they were sloppy with you. We've got them, and they do. We have all of it. Total proof of racketeering.
Can I disagree with you on one point? I don't think it's bigger than you. I don't think anything is bigger than the individual. I think that is the Christian message. What matters is the individual, the human soul, the person, each one made in God's image. And whenever your people say, well, it's bigger than just one person, that's bullshit, actually. Nothing is bigger than just one person.
No, Tucker, I agree with you.
Injustice done to you is a total outrage to the entire world. And by the way, you're not the only victim. If that's what you're saying, I'm hardly the only victim of injustice.
No, that's what I meant, though.
That's for sure. But I think it's so important to make sure, to the extent you can, with the power that you have in this life, to make sure that justice is done for the individual. Like, I really think that is Western civilization. By the way, the Eastern view, which is now very common in our country, deals only with groups and populations and the herd or the tribe. That's why they believe in collective punishment. But the Christian view is no, it's the individual, and each person matters. The hair on your head is numbered by God. So I just feel like we can't allow a single injustice to pass by if we can fix it.
No, to be clear, I totally agree with you. My point was, I know Trump has bigger fish to fry.
No, I get it. Well, that's true.
But this doesn't, because everything they're doing is about, oh, this media paid a thing to say they're wrong. They're laughing at him. They still have their power structure in place. Oh, ABC paid a fine. They paid a fine. Paul Weiss paid a fine. And they're still attacking your most ardent supporters to shut you down. And so that's all I'm trying to say is that will Trump let Mike Lindell get shut down? Will he allow this? All because the deputy AG that really runs everything is really a big leftist and thinks he's smarter than all of us. And it's just so disgusting because we have them cut and dry. And they're like, well, sir, he peed on graves. No one peed on graves. No one did any of this stuff they say. Trump never said the KKK are fine people. That was all a lie. And so if you give it to their propaganda, they win. Support your supporters. Stand up for them. You know, I saw Barron put out a whole list of vaccine bad reactions to the COVID shot after his dad took the shot. That's going to be the real rebellion here, is people around Trump, because he's 79 years old. He's not a bad guy. Great guy. Tell him the truth. We, all of us, can't be in a cult. When Trump is wrong, we got to call it out. But yeah, I mean, I'm here and, you know, I've seen this injustice. And I was literally going to say, when I came here, we're set up a week ago, I couldn't come a week ago because they had a receiver there at the office that day. I was supposed to come, literally looking at everything about to shut down. And I just had to say to people that if they do this to me, they'll do it to you. And then Mike Lindell defaulted. No jury trial, found guilty by a judge. All of you are in danger, folks. This is so real. And if Trump doesn't defend Lindell or me, whatever. I mean, I just hope Trump, when he's out in 3 years, remembers that Todd Blanche is Bill Barr 2.0. And if you think that little sneaky lawyer is your friend, you're a fool. So I think Todd Blanche should be removed, not because of me, but because everybody I talk to, he is literally there working against the president. He's the one telling the U.S. attorneys, don't do these prosecutions. And then Trump gets pissed and says, do it. They do it. So Trump, you did it with Sessions. You did it with Bill Barr. Why are you doing it with Blanche right now? It's just, please, I don't understand this blind spot of Trump.
I've never heard any of this before, but that's why I'm a fan of yours, because I always learn a lot.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars.
All right, so that's a clip from Tucker Carlson on with Alex Jones, or Alex Jones on with Tucker Carlson. It really was a fantastic interview. They talked for about 2 hours, and really, I think it just gets better and better. The beginning is really good, but then towards the end, they get into that, which is really, I think, the meat of the issue. And again, you can just see how one person in the position of authority can really derail everything that Trump is trying to do, and why they allow this to continue is really, I guess, up for speculation. Keystone Cash lashes out over a report about his colleagues hating him. FBI director is reportedly considered a lightweight. Well, apparently he's friends with Todd Blanche. Which is just, it must feel so great to be a Democrat. I mean, can you imagine? Can you imagine if it was that easy for us? Just you can be a Democrat your whole life, and then once Trump wins, go, actually, I'm a Republican now. And they're like, okay, well, great. You're in charge of all of the things that we're trying to do against Democrats, and you're just a Democrat operative. Like, okay, thanks. I guess I'll be in charge of this. I mean, it's like they don't even have to try. Republicans just hand it to them. And this is such a common reality. And it's like you just want to slap people in the face and be like, what are you doing? What do you not get about the situation that we're in? Your country is literally being destroyed right in front of you. You have all of the power you could ever want to stop it, and you just don't. You just aren't stopping it. It's beyond baffling. It is so utterly insane, and it's everywhere. It's ubiquitous. It's like constant. Oh, let's go to another clip. I got Marjorie Taylor Greene talking to Matt Gaetz. Clip number four here, talking about how the Republicans have this amazing opportunity to do whatever the hell we want right now, and we're just getting nothing. And we're not doing it for some reason. Yeah, apparently Trump is speaking. He's giving Charlie Kirk the Medal of Honor. So I guess that proves me wrong. Hey, you can give everything to Donald Trump. You can support him with your life, your sweat, your blood, your tears. And, you know, after you're murdered, he'll symbolically congratulate you. So there you go. That's the payment. I mean, they won't actually do a hardcore search for your killer or anything. It's not like they'll actually make a big deal out of it, honor you by going after the people that murdered you, but you'll get a Medal of Honor on your corpse. So thanks, Trump. So nice. Let's go to Marjorie Taylor Greene. It's all of them. It really is all of them. Let's go to clip four here. This is Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene talking about the fact that the Republicans just, they have a loaded gun on their lap and they just refuse to point it and pull the trigger. We have everything we need to get everything we want. And for some godforsaken reason, they are still clinging to this illusion of bipartisanship while we have leading contenders for Attorney General of Virginia that are saying, I want to murder my opponent and his children, and the Democrats don't even condemn him, won't even speak a bad word about him. The Democrats are actively encouraging violence against their supporters or against their enemies, and Republicans are still thinking that there's a possibility of bipartisanship in the future. Here's Marjorie Taylor Greene.
The shutdown, you were calling on Senate Majority Leader John Thune to use Republican votes to pass Republican spending bills. Why do you think he hasn't done that yet?
Well, he's made the excuse that he has to preserve the filibuster, which is the 60-vote rule in the Senate, because he wants to be able to continue bipartisanship with Democrats. My argument back against that, Matt, is that bipartisanship has been proven to be dead. Democrats and Republicans couldn't be further divided. We have a one-time opportunity here controlling the White House, the House, and the Senate. And I think that our agenda is so incredibly important. The American people overwhelmingly voted for it in November of 2024, that my argument back is Leader Thune needs to use courage, and Republicans in the Senate need to blow through the filibuster and pass not only Republican appropriation bills, but very important key strategic Republican agenda bills. That's the way that it should be done. And Democrats, if they get the control back, Matt, you and I both know, they are definitely going to blow through the filibuster. They already tried to do it in 2022 with their very dangerous Voting Rights Act that would have changed the way federal elections are run for forever, and that would have cost us the majority probably for forever. They did that, and the only way it was blocked was because Kristen Sinema and because Joe Manchin were the ones that blocked it. Well, those two Democrat senators are no longer there. And so Democrats will blow through the filibuster. They'll use the nuclear option when they get control again. Chuck Schumer already tried it. And so I think that Republicans need to govern, and they should use the nuclear option and get rid of that 60-vote rule.
It's the same thing that they do with the Supreme Court, since we're talking about it. Or they're not shy about the fact they want to expand it. Have 9 justices, 13 justices, and they'll all be Democrats. And I've been saying forever, it's like, it really does feel like you got a Democrat across the room. Republicans are sitting there with a loaded handgun in front of them. And the Democrat from across the room is going, I'm going to walk over there, grab that gun, and shoot you in the head. And the Republicans are going, well, you probably shouldn't. And here they come, just walking across the room. And the Republicans, they have the gun. They could pick it up and shoot at any time. But there's like, you know, it's really not a good idea to shoot a gun. You know, if you shoot me with that gun, who's to say somebody's not going to come to shoot you later? And the Democrats are just like, yeah, keep talking, brother. Bang! Like, they don't care. And the instant that they threaten to do it, you just have to do it. I mean, it's a dog-eat-dog political landscape that we're dealing with. And we got a bunch of just slugs on our side, just doing absolutely nothing for us ever. It's beyond infuriating. And, you know, it's just everything that we talk about. It's like, it's everywhere. We're just infected with liberalism. We are infested with it, with these people. And it's like, no matter where you look, no matter how, you know, conservative the organization, it will be replete with these little traitors, these little ideological radicals. And it's like, you look around and you're like, yesterday we played the video of the third grade kid whose teacher was punishing him because his parents were Trump supporters and enlisted his neighbor to spy on him and film him when he was at home. It's like, what? So it's like, okay, our elementary schools are being run by these psychopaths. They're in our Congress. They're in, you know, these major organizations absolutely everywhere. From top to bottom, we're just infested with these people who just act as outrageous as they possibly can, never get held to account, never get sufficiently punished, never actually have to go through any sort of process that everybody else is subject to. I mean, it's beyond infuriating. Half the time, we don't even know about these stories except for X. That allows us to actually explain them and spread them to people. So here's what I asked to Grok. I said, what are some big court cases decided by default judgment? The response, a default judgment occurs when a court rules in favor of one party because the opposing party fails to respond to a summons or appear in court. While default judgments are more common in civil cases such as debt collection or personal injury lawsuits, they're less frequent in high-profile or big court cases due to the significant stakes and legal representation typically involved. So he's got some notable cases involving default judgment. Smith v. Jones, 2022. While not a big case in terms of public prominence, this case is cited in legal discussions as an example of a default judgment being vacated due to proper service of process. So again, not a big deal. It's just it was a default judgment and then it got reversed because the person proved they weren't served correctly. Okay, so not a big deal or anything. Then it doesn't even have any other cases to point to. It just gives us general case categories. Credit card default case, right? So this is how default is supposed to be used. This is why default exists, for things like credit card default cases, where, you know, a creditor racks up a bunch of debt and then just ignores any demand to repay it. And just leaves the country or just changes address and doesn't tell the credit card company and just doesn't respond. And so the credit card company sues them. They don't respond. The judge says, well, they're not defending themselves. I decide on behalf of the plaintiffs. Okay, credit card. Same thing with divorce. Default judgments are common in divorce proceedings when one spouse fails to respond to a petition or appear in court. For instance, if a defendant does not file a response within the specified time frame, often 20 to 30 days, the court may grant the petitioner's request, including property division or child custody arrangements by default. These cases have profound personal and financial impacts, though they rarely reach the level of public prominence due to their private nature. Again, it's a demand to appear, they don't appear, default judgment. Okay, it's when there's literally no response. When somebody does not respond for a month, then okay, they default judgment. And then it goes on to explain there aren't really big cases involving default judgments. They don't really exist. Some of the only ones would be, for example, the U.S. Supreme Court cases from the 2024-25 term, such as Garland versus Vanderstock or TikTok Inc. versus ByteDance or TikTok Inc. versus Garland, were decided on substantive legal issues, e.g. constitutional or statutory interpretations, rather than procedural defaults. Similarly, landmark cases like Roe versus Wade or Brown versus Board of Education. So it's basically being like, yeah, big cases don't get, they don't get default judgment. That doesn't really exist. Okay? And it explains why. Default judgments are procedural rather than substantive, meaning they do not reflect a court's evaluation of the case's merits. For example, in Masters v. Lever, it was clarified that a default judgment does not imply the court agrees with the plaintiff's claims, allowing defendants to potentially re-argue facts in future proceedings. Vacating default judgments. Defendants can move to set aside a default judgment or showing valid reasons, such as improper service. Enforcement. Once granted, default judgments allow plaintiffs to pursue remedies like wage garnishment or asset seizures, which can have significant consequences. So again, it's like challenges in identifying big default judgment cases. It basically says it doesn't exist. If you want to look into it, you're going to have to go to like international, court cases, law cases. And it's like, well, I'm confused. Why are you even asking this? So I say, okay, well, what about Alex Jones and InfoWars? What about that one? And it says, well, Alex Jones's media platform InfoWars has been involved in several high profile defamation cases related to claims about 2012 Sandy Hook Elementary School, and it gives the background a little bit. Default judgment in November 2021, Connecticut Superior Court Barbara Bellis issued a default judgment against Jones and the InfoWars parent company Free Speech Systems in four consolidated defamation cases. The default was due to Jones's repeated failure to comply with discovery obligations, including refusing to provide financial documents and website analytics data. Bellis noted Jones's callous disregard for court orders, saying that he only gave sanitized and accurate financial records. Because of the default judgment, it was issued a $1.4 billion case. This is one of the largest defamation cases award, defamation cases, let alone default. No, just one of the largest defamation awards in U.S. history, and a rare instance of a high-profile case being decided by default judgment due to procedural noncompliance. Yeah, but we didn't not comply. We didn't disappear to another country. We actually gave them everything they asked for. We just didn't give it to them exactly correctly. And I'm telling you, that's literally the case. But it was that the Texas did the same thing. In October 2021, Travis County District Court Judge Maya Guerra Gamble entered default judgments against Jones InfoWars and related entities for flagrant bad faith and callous disregard of court orders to turn over documents to plaintiff's lawyers. As of the Connecticut case, the default judgment meant liability was established without a trial on its merits. Why default judgment were issue? Jones failed to provide critical financial records and Google Analytics data, which were necessary for the plaintiff to prove the extent of harm caused by the statements. Do you understand what it's saying? First of all, we were literally kicked off of Google Analytics before I even worked in InfoWars. In 2016, Google Analytics kicked us off their platform. So how are we supposed to get Google Analytics when we're not even allowed on their platform and weren't allowed for 5 years up until this case? That's a little bit odd, but what they're saying is they literally asked that we provide them evidence that showed that we had internal documentation and internal discussions about how popular Sandy Hook was and about how we'd get more money if we talked more about Sandy Hook. Therefore, the reason we were talking about Sandy Hook was because of, you know, financial ambitions. So we don't have that. We don't do that. We don't talk about things like that at InfoWars. We don't have those discussions. We don't decide our coverage based off of what makes money. Inconsequential value. So what they're saying is because you didn't give us the evidence that proves our case, we're going to default judgment. You either have to hand over evidence that we say will prove that you only talked about Sandy Hook because it made you money. So give us the evidence that proves our case, or it's a default judgment. What? What are we supposed to do there? Again, not even kidding. The documents Jones did provide, we did provide documents, were described as inadequate or misleading, frustrating the plaintiff's ability to build their case. Okay, I mean, what does that mean? Inadequate or misleading. It was the data. It was our bank accounts. It was our QuickBooks. We gave it to them. What more do they want? They wanted us to convict ourselves. They wanted us to provide, here's Google Analytics showing that Sandy Hook was popular. Here's internal emails saying that because it was popular, we covered it more, even though we knew it wasn't true. Like, none of that exists because none of those discussions happened. But because we didn't provide them, default judgment. Judges in both jurisdictions emphasize the default judgments are a last resort, but were warranted due to the refusal to engage in the legal process. We were absolutely engaged the entire time. It's complete nonsense. The Connecticut case in particular resulted in one of the largest defamation judgments ever, reflecting the severity of the harm caused by Jones's false claim, which again, we can get into, like, actually never even made a claims that were offensive. He made actually pretty much exactly the same claim that, you know, Jimmy Kimmel made about Charlie Kirk 2 weeks ago. Literally, I mean, Jimmy Kimmel showed a video of Donald Trump and went, look, Donald Trump is smiling and laughing when his best friend is supposed to be dead. Isn't that suspicious? But we have to have our lives destroyed because of this. Limitations and notes. Conclusion. So I say, has there been any comparable cases before that? And they basically say, no, not really. Doesn't really happen. Doesn't really exist, actually. You can go back to the Iran hostage crisis litigation in 1998. Okay. O.J. Simpson civil case in 1997. I mean, it's just, it's insane. This doesn't happen. This isn't the way that this is supposed to work. The Alex Jones Infowar cases are exceptional for several reasons, making exact parallels difficult to find. The $1.29 billion Connecticut award is among the largest defamation cases ever, dwarfing most prior default judgments. Even FISA cases against foreign states rarely reach this scale. I mean, they literally just, this is the first time they've done anything like this. And I could honestly go on and on and on about this and get into exactly why it was decided that this wasn't allowed. I mean, it honestly is beyond ridiculous. And then AI gets confused too, where like it can't figure out what happens before, what happens after. It's bizarre. Like at one point I'm asking Grok, like, well, what happened? They're like, well, during the trial, this came out. And I'm like, well, then how did it come out during the trial? But you're saying it's the reason the default judgment case happened. And it's like, oh, you're right. That can't have been the case. It's like, no, it's because this doesn't happen. This isn't the way the law is supposed to work. It hasn't been applied to anybody else before, but now they've done it with Alex Jones. Expect it to happen a hell of a lot more often from here on out. Default judgments, total criminal action, corruption.
Hakeem Jeffries, the petty tyrant, wants you to shut up.
Why don't you just keep your mouth shut?
He doesn't want you to have free speech. He doesn't want you to be able to exercise your views and stand up for yourself. That's because he, like other tyrants in the EU, Canada, the UK, the Democratic Party, can't win with their ideas that are so unpopular. They can only silence people. So in honor of him trying to tell all of us to shut up.
Can you like... shut up.
You get an additional 10% off right now at thealexjonesstore.com on top of all the other big sales with promo code Hakeem. It's that simple. You know Hakeem Jeffries and the Democratic Party have been attacking us, attacking you, attacking President Trump, trying to bully us into submission, but it's not going to work. And the larger store sale that's going on right now is all of the Patriot t-shirts, the Patriot apparel, the widest selection, some of the best designs are 1997 in honor of myself and the crew launching Infowars.com in 1997, 28 years of the Infowar. So that is the Veterans of the Infowar sale. And on top of it, 10% off at checkout with the promo code Hakeem. And there's a bunch of limited edition Infowars, Veterans of the Infowars shirts, all the original designs and more. Because if Infowars is shut down and the bad guys get the name, they've said they're going to try to stop us from using the term Infowar in the future. But it's a generic term. It belongs to the world. They're going to try to misrepresent it with The Onion and Bloomberg, who are running all of this. It's going to blow up in their face big time. But regardless, for original InfoWars designs and these limited editions that help fund this operation and the future operation, the Alex Jones Network backup, it is critical to get these right now because it could be your last chance. It's all coming to a head right now. So thank you all for your support. You are veterans of the InfoWar, and I salute you all.
Thank you.
back, ladies and gentlemen. Excuse me. This is the War Room, InfoWars.com. We're going to be joined by Viva Fry at the bottom of this hour. Talk about what exactly happened here with Alex Jones and the Supreme Court. Again, it's just just completely outrageous that this is allowed to go on. And it really is the type of thing where it's like when you know about this stuff and when you're on the inside of this stuff and when you actually research and like dig into this stuff, it becomes absurdly obvious where things have gone wrong, how things have been corrupted. And so then you have to ask, like, well, is everybody in power missing this? Is everybody in every position of authority blind to this reality that is so obvious to me? And it kind of makes you feel crazy a little bit, because you're like, there's no way this is the way the law is supposed to work. I've researched it. It's never happened this way before. It's not the reason default judgments are allowed to exist. I mean, think about that. It makes sense that, okay, you have a court system, and the question arises at some point, well, what happens if somebody just refuses to respond? Does court have no power there? No, we got to come up with something, right? Otherwise, people could just, then your court system just doesn't work, doesn't count, right? How ridiculous would that be? If somebody can sue you, and you can just crumple up the summons and throw it in the trash, and there's no ability for the court to do anything about it, like, okay, that means your court system just doesn't exist, really. It would be voluntary. You have to voluntarily submit yourself to being sued. That's ridiculous. You have to have a way to compel people, and default judgments is a fine way to do that. But it's for, like, extreme instances where that's the case, where people refuse to comply, refuse to participate, refuse to acknowledge the summons. Okay, there's got to be something to do that punishes them, or that, you know, we get an outcome to the case even if a person doesn't want to participate. But they're not using this same rule. And it's just this is what they do. It's another example of a vulnerability in our system that they are now learning to weaponize. There's a reason that we have some of these things. And, you know, if you don't have a moral compunction, if you don't have a internal reason to not take advantage of these vulnerabilities, then they'll be taken advantage of. So it's like they've just taken this thing, default judgment necessary for a functioning court system, and decided, let's just use that. Let's just use that to destroy the lives of our political enemies. And then the superior courts go along with it. Again, it really does just apply to just about everything that we talk about on a continual basis. I don't know. I honestly don't know what to do about it at this point. When you can have such a flagrant abuse of power, and we haven't even gotten into the bankruptcy stuff. That is all cut and dry, according to the judge himself. They tried to rig a bankruptcy auction. They tried to give InfoWars to the person who did not bid the highest and got caught with the other side collaborating with the person managing the bankruptcy to try to sell it to them for less, based off of bizarre, again, completely novel legal concepts about future earnings. And it's just, you know, they just have this setup where, like, they can try to do illegal things. And most of the time it just works. They're just allowed to get away with it. And even when they get caught, nothing happens to them. Well, try again differently next time. Try a different strategy next time. I mean, everything about this, from how the court case was filed, the FBI getting together all these groups, going after an opinion from 10 years ago, blaming every Sandy Hook conspiracy on one person, despite that one person not talking about it in the last 10 years and never actually doing anything to anybody involved. And then you get into the bankruptcy stuff, and it's just layer upon layer of malfeasance.
Every guest we've interviewed in studio, I've given our ultramethylene blue to, and they've all been blown away. Ladies and gentlemen, this isn't hype. All our supplements are great and have amazing health effects, but this one hits 99% of people within 30 minutes, and the long-term effects are even more amazing. So secure your ultramethylene blue now, the most powerful you can get on the market, at TheAlexJonesStore.com, and fund the tip of the spear in the fight for liberty and supercharge your own personal life. Believe me, if you don't take action and get it, you will never know how amazing it is. Over 99% of people have had incredible effects. You owe it to yourself right now to try Ultramethylene Blue, exclusively available at TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Unveiling the truth behind the globalist creed. Welcome to the War Room.
All right, welcome back, folks. This is the War Room, Infowars.com, band.video. We got a lot of other stuff to talk about. We'll get back into the Sandy Hook stuff with Viva Fry, who hopefully can help me understand a little bit more about this. Again, seems pretty cut and dry to me. Seems pretty cut and dry the way they're doing it now against Mike Lindell. Just declared guilty by a judge, no ability to defend yourself, and then a fake show trial with a jury who's been instructed to already find you guilty, and then you're prevented from using the First Amendment as an argument. And then people who you've never mentioned and never even heard of are suddenly awarded $50 million because you expressed an opinion 12 years ago. It's hard not to just keep talking about it because, man, it just goes on and on. And we really do. I know we're like producing a documentary about it. I don't know, I think it needs to be like a documentary series or something. We got a lot of other stuff to talk about. I'll get into. We got the Middle East peace plan still progressing forward, although there's some hiccup with the dead hostages. They're demanding that Hamas return the dead hostages, but Hamas is like, well, they're all buried under rubble. We don't even know where they are. They were bombed by the Israeli attacks, so that's not going to happen anytime soon. But other than that, it seems like the ceasefire is generally holding. This is another example of sort of the overall frustration with the Republicans. And that, like, it really does seem like the solution to everything, almost every problem in America, could be solved by Republicans getting their heads out of their asses. Like, it really is as simple as that. They have all the power that they could possibly want. They know the right thing to do. Even the people that are kind of ostensibly against them would actually welcome the moves that we want them to make. I've got video after video about that. I'll probably go to that here. But this is just another example. Just like we saw with Marjorie Taylor Greene, just like we saw with Alex and Tucker, right? Could the Trump DOJ put a stop to this? Yeah, in an instant. They're just not. Dodd Blanche, Democrat, is just the filter through which every Trump prosecution has to go through. And he's against Trump. So, okay, that's just not going to happen, apparently, because we just put an enemy in the top position for some godforsaken reason. Great. And Marjorie Taylor Greene, we have the House, the Senate, and the White House, and we can't get anything passed. We can't get anything done because, again, for some inexplicable reason, Republicans feel the need to protect Democrats' ability to participate. Why? Why the hell? And here's another example from Bowtied Ranger. Republican state legislators in deep red states could have stopped the national decline decades ago by redistricting congressional seats in their favor. Instead, they just decided to let Democrats rape the country sideways because it was fair or something. Pretty remarkable when you take a step back to look at it. You really can't hate these people enough. And this is in response to Eric Dougherty's tweet that says, Kansas Republican lawmakers have just officially greenlit a special session to draw out the last remaining Democrat congressional districts ahead of the 2026 midterms. And so they're doing what Texas is doing. Now California's freaking out because they really started all of this. Right, Trump's assistant, Harmeet Dillon, asked Texas, said, hey, you gotta redraw your congressional districts. They're not accurate. They're holdover. You guys should redraw it. Then California was like, well, then we'll redraw ours. But of course, there's only a few number of states, blue states, that could redraw their congressional districts, and it wouldn't really give them much of a boost anyway because they've sort of already been engaged in this and don't really have Republican representation in that state. And take a place like California, which still has a very sizable Republican population. And what would it be, 35%, something like that, votes Republican in California, and yet not a single congressman, not a single Democrat, not a single senator is Republican. So nearly half the state has zero representation, while the slight majority has all of the representation. Like, this is messed up. It's not right. But there's only so many blue states that could do this. There's a lot more red states that could do it, and we just haven't up till now. Now, again, the struggle that we're dealing with here is, like, these things aren't supposed to be weaponized. They're just not, okay? But once they are, then you have to as well. This is the dog-eat-dog conflict that I'm constantly harping on about. But this is the problem. There's this disconnect between Republicans and Democrats, where Democrats see themselves, have a worldview that is black and white and extreme to the point where anything is justified against Republicans. And so they don't even feel bad about what they're doing. They just see it as kind of like, you know, what's a little fib here or there if you're stopping Hitler, right? What's the big deal? Okay, sure, you know, I'll make a decision that I normally wouldn't make, but I understand the wider implications of the world at large. So they have Democrats in all these positions that are perfectly willing to push their power to its extreme limits, to exceed those limits, to abuse that power, because they feel righteous in doing so, and they're backed up by everybody else. Meanwhile, you've got Republicans with the same amount of power that have a moral compunction against using it and will refuse to, even if it means they lose. And so it sucks, but if that's the game they want to play, then we have to play that game. And the good news is, once we start playing that game, we can kick their asses. It's not even a problem. So why shouldn't we just eradicate entire congressional districts of Democrats? We're allowed to. Why not? They want to play this game? Let's play it. They want to talk about getting rid of the filibuster and passing things with a 60-person vote? Let's just do that. We have all the power. Let's just do it. Let's use the power that we have to entrench our own power. This is not difficult. So it looks like Charlie Kirk's wife is about to speak. We can go to that. Here, this is Erica Kirk receiving the medal awarded him posthumously by President Trump, the Medal of Freedom, on today, what would have been Charlie Kirk's 32nd birthday. Let's go to Erica Kirk now.
In a meaningful way, and thank you for making this event a priority amid the peace process in the Middle East. Thank you. Very grateful. Charlie always admired your commitment to freedom, and that's something that both of you shared, so thank you. Your support of our family and the work that Charlie devoted his life to will be something I cherish forever, so thank you. To our gracious First Lady and her office for making this event possible, thank you as well. It's beautiful. To Vice President and the lovely Usha fans, your friendship has been an unbelievable encouragement. Thank you. And to all our friends and family that are here and watching from all around the world, thank you for loving us. Thank you for praying for us. and for believing in what Charlie believed in. And to our Turning Point USA staff and the Charlie Kirk Show staff, we love you more than you could ever know. And to the Turning Point USA chapters that are watching all across America right now, you are the heartbeat of this future and of this movement. Everything that Charlie built, you guys are the legacy holders of that. You are living proof that his mission did not die with him. It lives through you. And Charlie always said the next generation will decide whether freedom endures. And because of you, I know that freedom will endure. It will. And today we're gathered not only to celebrate Charlie's birthday, but to honor a truth that he gave his entire life to defend, and that's freedom. The very existence of the Presidential Medal of Freedom reminds us that the national interest of the United States has always been freedom. Our founders etched it into the preamble of our Constitution, and those words are not relics on parchment. They are a living covenant. The blessings of liberty are not man's invention. They are God's endowment. Charlie lived for those blessings, not as abstract words, but as sacred promises. He used to love to journal about this topic all the time, and with such a heart postured of gratitude. And he believed that liberty was both a right and a responsibility. And he used to say, freedom is the ability to do what is right without fear. And that's how he lived. He was free from fear. He was free from compromise, free from anything that could enslave his soul. His name, Charles, literally means free man. And that's exactly who my husband was. He was a free man. And from the time I met him, sitting across from him, being interviewed on politics and philosophy and theology, anything that Charlie loved, any topic he loved, and I just saw the fire in his soul, and there was this divine restlessness within him that came from knowing God placed him on this earth to protect something very, very sacred for all of us. And he never stopped fighting for people to experience freedom. He didn't. Charlie often said that without God, freedom becomes chaos. And he believed liberty could only survive when anchored to truth. And I remember in one of his speeches, he told the audience that the opposite of liberty isn't law. He said it's captivity. And that the freest people in the world are those whose hearts belong to Christ. But what's so powerful is that Charlie had the ability to communicate so brilliantly across all generations. And he reminded us that in a world that tells us freedom is, you know, doing whatever you want to do, the real freedom is the power to live freely and to do what is right. And in one of his journal entries, he wrote that he wanted everyone to know that you can't have liberty without moral responsibility. Freedom divorced from faith eventually just destroys itself. And what's so fascinating about all of this is looking back these past 12 years of Turning Point USA and his mission, there's almost this veil of sacredness. Because what I realize is that while he was building an organization, he was also building a movement. One that called people back to God, back to truth, and a movement that was filled with courage. And ironically, for a man who impacted millions, Charlie never desired to be the center of attention. He just wasn't. My husband was not a man of extravagance. He loved simple but deeply meaningful things. Truly, he loved his late night walks. He loved buying more books than he could ever read because he felt there was no such thing as a book budget. And he loved being able to read to our kids the same bedtime story on repeat because he knew it was their favorite. But to him, that was special. And he loved to sit in the sun on a Saturday morning with his cup of decaf coffee and his phone was off because he was honoring the Sabbath. And for him, it was that moment to catch his breath and just be in peace because he was unreachable at the moment. And he preferred quiet birthdays. But that never stopped me from telling him. I told him every single year, I said, baby, I love your birthday. I said, because it's the day that God knew the world couldn't go another day without you. And so the rhythm of our usual birthday celebration for him was mint chocolate chip ice cream. He only had it twice a year, on his birthday and 4th of July. It's just, and then after that, it was back to work as usual. But last year, his one birthday wish was to see the Oregon Ducks play the Ohio State. And they won. Oregon won that night. And it was by far one of the most memorable nights of his birthday experience of his life until today. And so, honestly, President Trump, I have spent 7.5 years trying to find the perfect birthday gift for Charlie. And it's so difficult. And those of you that have spouses or loved ones, you know how difficult it is sometimes to buy a gift for someone that you love. Because he wasn't a materialistic man, so that also did not help. But now I can say with confidence, Mr. President, that you have given him the best birthday gift he could ever have.
Thank you.
It's such an honor. And the recognition of a life lived for defending freedom. And that's what Charlie fought for until his last breath. And it was written across his chest in those final moments on one of his simple t-shirts that always carried a message. And this one bearing a single word, freedom. That was the banner over his life. And that shirt was a declaration. The same declaration he made in every speech, every campus visit, every time he shared the gospel at a church, every sleepless night that he would spend praying for the youth of this nation and planning for the future of our country and just impressing upon them that when we defend liberty, we defend the soul of our nation. My husband never told anyone what to say. He never did. He never told anyone what to say. He would just encourage them to think. He would encourage them to think outside of the traditional political labels. He would want them to think in a way that was anchored in wisdom and truth. But he would never tell anyone what to say. Charlie wasn't content to simply admire freedom. He wanted to multiply it. He wanted to multiply freedom. He wanted young people to taste it and to understand it and defend it. He wanted them to see that liberty isn't self-indulgence, it's self-governance under God. He wanted them to see that. And every day I'd see him getting ready for work. He'd put on his cross necklace, he'd put his ring on his finger. And the boldness in his demeanor was always fearlessness. He wasn't afraid. He was never afraid. And his daily actions, whether in office or on campus or at a church, it was always without fear. That was his creed. That is how he lived out every single day. He didn't fear being slandered. He did not. He didn't fear losing friends. I can tell you that. He didn't. He didn't care. He stood for truth and stood for freedom, and he did not. Everything else was just noise to him. And it's because his confidence in Christ was absolute. That's why. There was no limit to what he would have sacrificed to defend freedom for all. And if the moment had come, he probably would have run for president, but not out of ambition. He would only have done it if that was something that he believed that his country needed from a servant's heart standpoint. And Charlie lived only 31 short years. Now he's 32, but on this side of heaven, but he lived. He lived every single second he lived. He filled every single day with purpose, and he fought for truth when it was unpopular. And he stood for God when it was costly, but that's what we're called to do. Surprisingly enough, he did pray for his enemies, which is very hard, but he did. He did. He did. No one else, I mean, I saw him do it. No, he never did it in front of anyone else, but I can attest to that. But he also loved people when it was inconvenient. And he ran his race with endurance, and he kept the faith. And now he wears the crown of a righteous martyr. And for me and for our children, the truth really steadies our grief, because heaven gained what earth could no longer contain. A free man made fully free. And to all watching, this is not a ceremony. This is a commissioning. And my message is simple. I want you to be the embodiment of this medal. I do. I want you to free yourself from fear. I want you to stand courageously in the truth. Listen for the still, small voice of God. And remember that while freedom is inherited in this country, each of us must be intentional stewards every single day.
Very powerful speech from the wife of the late Charlie Kirk on his what would have been his 32nd birthday, receiving the Medal of Honor from Trump and giving, of course, a powerful eulogy for Charlie Kirk. And I think she's exactly right, and reflects something I've tried to make a central pillar of, not just the way I cover things, but the way I interpret things. The liberty is not a license to do anything. It's a demand that you do the right thing. It's a requirement to do the right thing. And that really, it goes to the heart of everything that we talk about on InfoWars, every single topic. So it's the vulnerabilities that I'm talking about, right? That's what makes a civilization free. Civilization is free when you can have, you know, food stands that run on the honor system. Because people aren't going to just steal your food and not pay you for it. They're moral people. They wouldn't do that. As soon as you get one immoral person in there, you can't have that food stand anymore. As soon as you have one crack in the dam, the whole thing shatters. As soon as you have one person who's willing to take advantage of those vulnerabilities, willing to cut corners, screw people over, suddenly it becomes incumbent on everybody else to either adopt that mentality or be screwed over. And it just goes to the heart of everything that we talk about, from immigration, transgenderism, to crime overall. It's just like, we can either live in a prison or we can live in an open field. If you live in an open field, you gotta be worthy of it. You gotta show that you're actually capable of not being controlled like an animal. You have to be a human being. We're surrounded by monsters.
You're not going to talk to me and talk over me, non-New York residents, because you don't want to hear what I have to say.
Oh, I'm listening.
So why don't you just keep your mouth shut?
I've been on air for 31 years, but 28 years ago, I launched InfoWars, and it's changed the world thanks to all of your support of the operation. People like Hakeem Jeffries want us to shut up.
Can you, like, shut up?
That's what all their lawfare, all their lawsuits, all their attacks have been about, and they're passing anti-free speech laws in Canada, the UK, Europe. They're arresting people for even criticizing the government, and they're trying to bring that here. And that's why it's so important to try to keep InfoWars on the air. But regardless, it'll easily be taken off very, very soon. We're going to continue on in the fight. But going forward, we'll no longer be called InfoWars. That's why it's so important now, which could be your last chance, to get all of the great shirts, ball caps, hoodies, sweaters, you name it, that have InfoWars on it. The classic designs and some of the new designs. That's why we're launching the InfoWars Veteran Edition, or Veterans of the InfoWar. All of you that supported the InfoWar, you are the InfoWar. You are the modern Paul Revere's. You're the reason we're having this massive success here in the United States and around the world. You're the reason the globalists are desperate and admit their entire system is collapsing down around them. We're winning major battles, but we've not yet won the main war. And I have been proud to fight with you over these decades. I am so blessed and satisfied by the incredible effect we've all had together. So to celebrate 28 years of the InfoWar, 1997 to 2025, which could be the end of this incarnation of it, but I hope we go on. And regardless, the InfoWar never dies. It belongs to the people. It's the term for information warfare. They use lies. We use truth. But the URL and this building and all of that goes away, and it's like rocket engines, boosters falling off as the main craft goes into escape velocity and orbit. As John Paul Jones famously said, the founder of the U.S. Navy, I have not yet begun to fight. But it is important to get original InfoWars gear while you still can. All the classic designs and the new Veterans of the InfoWar designs that are limited edition and help keep this operation on the air and fund the new Alex Jones network that's being built. We've already seen some of the studios, the great work the crew's been doing. But it's much more expansive than what you've seen, and that'll be revealed very, very soon. And that's thanks to all of your support. So when you go to theoliveshowstore.com, you will have access to the widest selection, over 500 designs of Patriot t-shirts, ball caps, hoodies, sweaters, you name it. And all of the t-shirts are $19.97 in honor of the year that I launched InfoWars.com. itself. So again, thank you all for your support. And there's more.
But wait, there's more.
With promo code Hakeem at checkout, because he wants us all to shut up, and we're not going to shut up, get an additional 10% off right now. That's promo code Hakeem. Use it now.
Oh, I'm listening.
So why don't just keep your mouth shut?
Hakeem Jeffries hopes you shut up. Hakeem Jeffries hopes you don't help keep us on the air, because then he can continue his tyrannical activity. That's why it's a revolutionary act when you support this operation and wear the Patriot apparel, available right now at thealexjonesstore.com, celebrating 28 years of the InfoWar. Thanks for keeping us on the air. And Hakeem, we've just begun to fight. We're not going to shut up.
Bigotry will get you nowhere. We are fighting to protect the health care of the American people in the face of an unprecedented Republican assault.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room, InfoWars.com, band.video. Make sure you go to thealexjonesstore.com. We brought back the 1997 Mega Sale, so you're getting all hats. Oh, all hats for just 1997. It was shirts. This is in celebration of InfoWars being on air since 1997. All hats for just 1997. Plus, every dollar you spend this week gets you entered to win the Alex Jones Was Right tip jar full of 51-ounce Spartan silver rounds. Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Also, Shilajit gummies are 50% off no matter how many you buy. So go today, thealexjonesstore.com. Support us into the future no matter what happens. And what's happening? That is the topic of our discussion with my guest, Viva Fry. He, of course, is a Canadian lawyer, former political candidate for the People's Party of Canada, and YouTuber under that pseudonym, Viva Fry. You can find him at vivabarneslaw.locals.com and on X at the Viva Fry. That's F-R-E-I. That's how you spell Fry. Thanks so much for joining us, Mr. Fry.
Thank you very much. I should clarify, I'm also a former lawyer at this point in time. I voluntarily relinquished my license up in Quebec because all the people were doing was filing ethics complaints because they didn't like my tweets. So I ended in good standing, but never plan on practicing in Quebec again. And I never plan on practicing again if I can help it.
Okay, but you haven't forgotten everything that you knew as a lawyer, so you're still able to comment on this way better than I can. I'm just sort of seething in anger about the fact that our Supreme Court case was tossed to the side. Have you looked into this? What do you know about it? Were you expecting the Supreme Court to take our case, or is this what you expected?
Well, I just heard that news today, and I'm I won't say I'm shocked. I did think the Supreme Court was going to get involved. The only thing I have to double check now is whether or not this is an indication, or like, was this the end of the line? Is there any other aspect of this case where the Supreme Court can get involved? But this was the $1.4 billion judgment that they've declined to take the case up. And it was an injustice from you know, day one, and right, a violation of due process from day one, and a mockery of the judicial system from day one. I'm sort of disappointed that the Supreme Court didn't get involved, but not shocked. I mean, the media has done a good job of painting Alex Jones and InfoWars as a pariah that doesn't deserve saving. But they came for Alex Jones, and they're going to do this exact same lawfare against everybody else: Giuliani, members of Trump's administration, and sooner than later, you know, members of the population, just random citizens.
Right. Well, do you think that the negative coverage of Alex had an impact on this? I mean, does the Supreme Court take that type of thing into account when it's deciding whether or not to take a case?
Yeah, I mean, look, I couldn't pretend to know how the Supreme Court thinks, but it is a lot easier to turn down a case where the social goodwill is not on the side of taking it up. You know, there's a lot of people out there who still wrongly believe, but in their own minds righteously believe, that Alex Jones is public enemy number one, who gets everything that he deserves in life. And the reality is, you know, I go back to the guy who made the Penthouse article about was it Larry Flint? I'm trying to remember. They take these bad judicial precedents and deliberately impose them on people who are politically disfavored or socially disfavored. And sometimes it requires, you know, demonizing them before you go full hog on the process. But no, I'm certain it played a role. If it was Mother Teresa, I'm sure they would have gotten involved. But of course, people are going to say, well, if it was Mother Teresa, she would have never been in this problem in the first place. But this is coming. I say it's coming soon to a theater near you for everybody, but the reality is it's already been there for a lot of people. The process, the system is broken, and they just picked on a man with a big platform to amplify that. But Supreme Court doesn't seem to want to undo this big mess of a judicial injustice, and so it'll stand.
And that's really the concerning part, right? I mean, even outside of us, outside of how you feel about InfoWars, this is clearly setting a precedent, and we're seeing it happen with Mike Lindell as we speak. And like, when I think about it, I mean, everybody should be terrified of this, especially if you know, own a business or something, but you don't have to. You can be just an average person. They can dig up an opinion of yours from 10 years ago, default judgment, even though you provided an excess of material. I mean, how do you even defend against this? This is just, as far as I can tell, the eradication of trial by jury as we know it, right?
It is. Look, we've seen this. They did it now to Navarro. They did it to, well, I should say they started with Alex Jones, but they also, you know, probably started earlier with other notable figures. But the denial of defenses, to basically say by judicial decree, you no longer get to defend yourself in this case. So they did it to Alex Jones, like, default him into liability where there's no trial on the merits. Plaintiffs don't need to prove their case. They don't need to prove the elements of law. They get to circumvent issues of statute of limitations, issues of legal defenses. And so they strip the defendant of their ability to defend. They did it with Alex Jones, did it with Navarro, did it with Steve Bannon, did it with Rudy Giuliani, did it with Mike Lindell. And now it's just become accepted, where people don't even understand that there was never a trial in this case. There was never a hearing on the merits before a jury. He was defaulted into liability. And people don't seem to understand just how egregious it is. I was a practicing lawyer for 13 years. Occasionally, in the most egregious of circumstances, you could say, all right, the defendant has acted so badly, he doesn't get to defend himself anymore. The plaintiffs still need to prove their case. They don't just get to walk in and pretend that they have a contract if they don't have a contract. They've got to show the contract. They've got to prove the elements of their case. In this case, they just simply defaulted the plaintiffs into a win, and then had a hearing, a show trial hearing on the quantum. And the Supreme Court, I don't know what's left where the Supreme Court can still get involved. But if this stands, it's a mockery of the system, and the blueprint has been laid now for everybody. And they did it to Trump also. Don't forget Engoron, what I call New York nipple judge Engoron, proudly caught on camera 10 years earlier saying he's got tools to prevent people from raising arguments in their own defense. And in the case with Trump, they stripped Trump of his ability to raise certain defenses. In the E. Jean Carroll case, they prohibited Trump from asserting his innocence. I mean, they gagged Trump. And so they did it from everyone. Started with Alex Jones, ended up with the president. And now the rest of America is going to live with this judicial precedent.
And that might be the most egregious part, that they hold these things that look an awful lot like jury trials. There's a jury there. There's a judge. You can call witnesses. And the punishments would still apply, right? If you lie on the stand, you're still going to be treated as if you're lying during an actual court proceeding. It's aired as if it's an actual court proceeding. I hear on X all the time people going, well, you know, he had a jury and he was found guilty. It's so egregious. And the same thing with Alex Jones. They said you cannot even reference the First Amendment when you're up there. It's like astonishing. It's just in my mind. I'm trying to make a list of like, I mean, the people who filed it didn't have standing. The FBI agent that filed it was never even mentioned. The way the default judgment was decided was ridiculous. The way the show trial happened was ridiculous. The way the judgment, I mean, every part of this was screwed up. And honestly, I didn't have hope that the Supreme Court, but it's kind of like, if our system is real, the Supreme Court will step in. If we really have a system that's actually trying to get to the truth, they have to step in. And I'm just ready to throw everything out. I'm ready to throw the baby out with the bathwater at this point. I mean, where do we go from here? Where does InfoWars go from here in terms of like, how do you protect yourself against this? How are you going to protect yourself against this? What ability does anybody have to prevent this from happening to them?
The reality, you don't. You have a way of protecting yourself against this. The reality is, as we've seen with Elon Musk, there's no such thing as enough FU money in the world when they can lock you up physically. You know, the CEO of Telegram, what's his name? What's his name?
Paskov, I think, or Pavlov?
Pavel Durov. They can lock you up. And so it's a warning for every platform. It's a warning for every creator. If they don't like what you say, they'll find a way to shut you down and shut you out. The amazing thing is also just to appreciate it. They can default you into a finding. They can deprive you of your defenses. And then even if they get an unfavorable jury verdict, like they got in the E. Jean Carroll case, where the jury said, no, Trump did not rape E. Jean Carroll. And then you get an activist judge who gets out there and says, nah, well, close enough. So I'm going to adjudicate him a rapist.
Right.
And it's a fundamentally broken system. If the Supreme Court doesn't step in, then I don't know, it requires some legislative, congressional remediation. But the bottom line is the media already had, extra protections. It already had First Amendment protections. There's already the standard of Sullivan versus the New York Times of actual malice when it comes to the media. They've just found a way to bypass everything when they want to because of the target. And so, I don't know what the solution is. I do want to see what remedy is left if this is really the end of the line for InfoWars and this insane injustice. But it's a sign of the times. So, you know, it's North Korean-esque. I guess the only difference is Otto Warmbier, he had his trial too, but it was just a lot shorter than what they put Alex Jones through.
Well, and the punishment Alex Jones has suffered under is more severe than hell, rapist in certain cases. Like, it'd almost be better if he was convicted of rape. He'd go to jail for a couple years and be out. This is going to stick with him for the rest of his life. I mean, what else, what other, you know, instance in the legal process in America do you have a case where a guy can be forced to spend tens of millions of dollars to defend himself, have his wage garnished forever, lose everything he's ever, you know, earned and ever built? I mean, where's the, you know, the Fifth Amendment protections or whichever amendment is, you know, against cruel and unusual punishment? How does a man deserve to lose everything he's built and his children's inheritance because somebody was offended by something he said a decade ago? Like, this is so out of pocket. It's insane to me.
It is insane, but what you're describing was the objective the entire time. And you know that, and your audience knows that. The goal was never compensation for any actual damages any actual victims actually suffered. It was to shut Alex Jones up, and not just to shut Alex Jones up, to literally appropriate his voice, mm-hmm. his likeness, and so that they could control what the voice of Alex Jones would say on a going forward basis. They tried to appropriate his social media and his likeness out of bankruptcy. They've created an indentured servant. They've created a form of modern day judicial slavery. And it is insane. But we've seen it everywhere. Like, you know, when it came to debanking, and they debank people because of their politics, where literally convicted rapists still have bank accounts. I mean, I'm thinking up in Canada where, you know, we've seen this level of tyranny, fascism, statism, whatever you want to call it, authoritarianism. We're seeing it in the states, coming out of certain states and coming out of certain, you know, judicial districts. But I would have thought the Supreme Court would get involved. And I'm just, before I really, you know, go crazy on this, I just want to make sure that there are no more recourses. Maybe there's a reason why Supreme Court says no here, but there's another venue where they might get involved with later on. But it is quite clearly exactly what they wanted. And what people don't understand is that, all right, you want to make a violent event denialism a $1.5 billion penalty. Everybody who's out there claiming that the Trump assassination attempt was failed or was a hoax. I'm sorry, the failed assassination attempt was a hoax. Violent event denialism. Everybody out there who wants to say Charlie Kirk didn't actually get shot that day or it was whatever. Violent event. All of you. You're on the hook for $1 billion. You might they might be stupid ideas, but when you are criminalizing, I mean, when you are making the end of your being. Because you've publicly stated stupid opinions or baseless opinions, well, that if that's good for the goose and good for the gander, we're all going to get culled, pun intended.
Yeah, well, and you know, the times have changed so much since 2012 when this first happened. Like, yeah, for the most part, people just accepted the story back in 2012. It's been 13 years since then, and there's no major shooting that occurs now where you don't have a huge number of people saying it was fake or a hoax or not what they thought it was. Hell, Jimmy Kimmel got, you know, fired, and that whole hubbub was about him looking at a public, you know, prominent shooting event, showing a video of Trump and saying he doesn't seem adequately sad. I mean, it's literally exactly what Alex Jones did about Sandy Hook. So it's like, it's mind blowing how things have changed, but we're still being punished for, we're just ahead of the curve a little bit, I guess. But, you know, I'm asking Grok, because I'm not a legal expert and I'm very, you know, out of my depths here, but I'm asking Grok to give me other examples of default cases of this level. And the AI is getting confused and being like, I don't understand the question. It's like, do you mean like divorce cases and credit card cases? Like has there been cases like this decided on a default judgment ever before? Or is this totally unique in legal history?
In my experience, even as a lawyer, we had a case which was actually a case that was imported from the States because somebody in the States, was deprived of their ability to defend in the case. So they were gagged. You can't defend because you've been a very, very bad boy. The plaintiff still had to, you know, make their case. And they got this wild several hundred million dollar ruling, which they then took to Canada to homologate to try to enforce on assets in Canada. That was the first time I'd ever seen of a case where someone was literally, just imagine you tape their mouth shut when they are a defendant in the courtroom and they got, you know, they were proven wrong because they couldn't defend. That's all I've ever seen. It's called, you know, default to plead, where they say, okay, you've been so bad, you destroyed evidence. You don't get to defend. Not where you default into a finding of liability without having to prove your case. The easiest way to conceptualize how this is so insane. Just imagine, I don't know, you argue that you have a contract where someone will pay you $10 million, whatever. And they act so badly that they not only don't get to defend, you don't have to prove the existence of the contract. And you get your $10 million. It's like, oh, and imagine you never actually had the contract to prove in the first place. I mean, that's basically what this was. I mean, it's a little more nuanced legally because there were defenses and whatnot, but there were still statute of limitations. If their claim were time barred, the fact that you gag a defendant and preclude him from defending does not mean the claim is not time barred. And had you adduced the evidence as to when you became aware of the statements, when you took suit, if you were time barred, you don't need a defendant to defend against that. You fail to prove your case. So it was... Look, it's an obvious injustice. The only question is, you got a number of people out there who are sufficiently brainwashed into thinking Alex Jones said a couple of bad things and therefore his life should be ruined. FAFO, you know, he shouldn't have said it. Now he learned a lesson. First of all, people have the freedom to say stupid things. And you don't need to be critical of Alex to say he said some things that were stupid, factually incorrect. A few minutes over a decade that they put into a montage and made it look like his entire InfoWars career was based on denying Sandy Hook, which it wasn't. He acknowledged it happened and acknowledged the children that were killed, you know, but then hypothesized that there might be other issues at play here. And you're going to destroy a man for the rest of his life, create an indentured servant and a $1.6 billion dam. Half as much as was being requested as compensation for the Armenian genocide. That's what Alex Jones's statements were worth. $90 million to an FBI agent who didn't lose any family members on that day because he claims Alex Jones made fun of him for, I don't know, being a phony when Alex Jones wasn't even the one who made that theory in the first place. So it is what it is, but unfortunately it's an absolute injustice.
Right. And we never even heard of this FBI agent before he sued us. And he apparently was the central figure in all of this. How that isn't an issue. Of course, Ed Martin tried to do something with that, but that was withheld by Todd Blanche. But you're right. It's like the double-edged thing. It's like you've got this is not Alex Jones's thing. He was not the Sandy Hook guy. That was never central to his coverage of anything ever. And he wasn't the one who was primarily pushing that theory in the first place, right? Both it wasn't his thing, so you can't label it on him, but also there were dozens, if not hundreds, of other people making a hell of a lot more content about Sandy Hook that wasn't Alex Jones, but then YouTube goes through and deletes all of those, so now you can't find him, and it looks like Alex Jones is the only one that ever talked about this. But actually, the point that you made was one made by one of Alex's attorneys, where he says, basically, you know, Jones referred to the Sandy Hook shooting a handful of times in the tens of thousands of articles published on his platform while he broadcasted on air 6 days a week for 5 to 6 years. If the suit was against New York Times, Woolman said, the Sandy Hook families wouldn't be pecking through their finances. And that's exactly right, right? If you were to sue somebody at the New York Times, you wouldn't then get access to every receipt the New York Times ever had go through their financial records, right? Why is InfoWars being treated like that when no other media outlet would ever be expected to have that level of, you know, snooping around in their internal documents just because they're sued for defamation?
It is the way to look to manufacture the default. So, you know, keep asking for stuff and then allege that some of the requests for documentation has not been respected, so you can default into a finding a liability of a verdict. I mean, that was the MO. So it should never have been in the first place, but the reason why it was allowed, because they needed to manufacture a default on discovery obligations so they could then default into liability. But they also, you know, didn't apply journalistic standards or the standards that apply to journalists to InfoWars because they didn't believe it was journalism that required the protections under the law. But just, you know, to bring it back also to Jimmy Kimmel coming out and saying, yeah, it doesn't look like Trump is really grieving all that much, or blaming the attack on one of their own, which is effectively like saying in any mass shooting, imagine suggesting that it was the family of the victims that carried out the mass. That's effectively what Jimmy Kimmel was suggesting with this. Not that it was a left-wing furry nutbag who did this, but that it was a MAGA Republican. So you're basically flipping the tragedy and blaming the victim of the tragedy for the tragedy. That's $1 billion now, though. I mean, that's the standard. So Jimmy, you got your job back and enjoy working the rest of your life for Charlie Kirk or TPUSA. And that's the standard. I don't think it should apply, but now that they've done it, why shouldn't it apply?
I mean, it literally can't apply, right? Like, you cannot apply this level of scrutiny to everybody. We just wouldn't have a career anymore. Like, nobody could be on the media anymore because you can take anything out of context. And that's the thing, right? When I think about, like, how do you avoid this, it's like, I guess you just never talk. If you just never say anything, nobody can ever take what you say out of context. Nobody can ever claim to be offended by it. But other than that, if you've ever said anything even remotely offensive to anybody, then you're – life can be destroyed and you can become an indentured servant of people who hate you. It is beyond ridiculous. And just to, you know, back up what you said, this again is from my communication with Grok, legal expert. But, you know, they actually say it really in no uncertain words. In the Texas case with Judge Guerra Gamble, Jones was ordered in 2019 and 2020 to produce financial records, web analytics like Google Analytics and marketing data showing how InfoWars profited from Sandy Hook content. Like, they literally asked us to provide documents that showed that we aligned our sales figures to our coverage of Sandy Hook and therefore covered Sandy Hook to do more sales. That doesn't exist. We don't have those documents. So they're, as far as I'm reading this, tell me if I'm wrong. And again, they say by mid-2020, it only turned around partial records, fragmented sale figures with no context about Sandy Hook-related revenue. So they asked us, okay, prove our case for us or you're defaulted. Give us the documentation that proves you covered Sandy Hook to profit or else you're going to default judgment. Prove yourself wrong and us right or else you get a default judgment. Am I reading that wrong?
I remember living through it at the time. They're basically saying communicate to us documentation that doesn't exist. And if you don't, we're going to claim you didn't comply with discovery obligations. They did it with, I think they also asked for like a list of all the videos that Alex Jones talked about Sandy Hook, except he didn't have access to his YouTube account anymore because he had been shut out of Google and he was physically unable to provide that. And then they said, oh, you didn't provide it, default. And now you are not just precluded from defending. We're just going to give the victory over to the plaintiffs. It's insanity. There's no other way to describe it. And anybody who thinks they're okay with it just doesn't understand or is happy with the injustice because it's being used against their political rivals for now. It's not the way these things work, and it sure as heck is not going to be the way these things end.
I know that's I'm like struggled to describe this. I'm like, if you can't see what's going on here, I don't know if I can explain it to you. It's so on the face obvious how wrong this is. So I guess that we got about 2 minutes left in the segment. Can you make the case for somebody that either doesn't care or doesn't like Alex Jones? Like, explain to the normie out there why they should care about this, what this means for them and their future and their country moving forward. If they hate Alex Jones and don't give a damn about him, what argument would you make to them on why they probably should care about this?
It's an easy one-liner. Congratulations on having ushered in a world where if you deny the official government narrative, you are susceptible of a massive judgment to shut you up and bankrupt you. That's basically what it comes down to. I disagree with some of the statements Alex made because I think they're factually incorrect. What this is tantamount to saying is if you deny the official government narrative, if you question the official government narrative, you are at risk of being destroyed by the judicial system in furtherance of protecting the official government narrative. That's what it comes down to. If you don't understand that, you can take a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. And there's another part of that, which I won't, another joking, but you can't make people think. That's right. Basically the bottom. So that's it. Congratulations. You now need to affirm and ratify the official government narrative, failing which you are at exposure for lawsuit.
And it's it's just especially crazy in this time where everybody questions everything. And, you know, sometimes for a very good reason and sometimes the official story is proven wrong. It's insane that at this moment the restrictions are increasing so much. And are you still in Canada or are you getting the hell out of there? Things are getting crazy.
No, things are getting crazy in Canada. We don't have much time to talk about this now, but the in Canada, the tyranny is in full force where people are saying, Viva, why do you care about the government killing a bunch of ostriches up in Edgewood, British Columbia? They manufactured a basis to slaughter animals to appropriate private property. And if you think they're going to stop with ostriches, congratulations, they're going to come to cattle. And then they're going to come to your cat and your dog. And then they're going to come to who the hell knows, maybe your kids. Oh, what's that? Your kid was playing with a bird that we determined had H5N1. You got to lock up your kid now for 2 weeks. They did it during COVID. People didn't learn the bloody lesson during COVID. And now they are ushering in this tyranny up in Canada. But I have fled to the free state of Florida. I ran for the country, People's Party of Canada, before I ran from the country. And now I gotta say, enjoying the free state of Florida and fighting the good fight from here.
Look, I don't blame you at all. Everything I see out of Canada is beyond insane. The ostrich is just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, they're talking about life sentences for non-crime hate speech. What? They just sent somebody to jail for 2 years for questioning or downplaying the Holocaust? It's like, things are getting crazy there. We're losing free speech. We have to fight for it. Thank you so much for joining us. Viva Fry has been my guest. Viva BarnesLaw.locals.com. Follow him on X at the Viva Fry. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you. Have a good one.
I'll see you again soon. All right, stay tuned, folks. We're on the other side. Don't go anywhere.
Hakeem Jeffries, the petty tyrant, wants you to shut up.
Why don't you just keep your mouth shut?
He doesn't want you to have free speech. He doesn't want you to be able to exercise your views and stand up for yourself. That's because he, like other tyrants in the EU, Canada, the UK, the Democratic Party, can't win with their ideas that are so unpopular. They can only silence people. So in honor of him trying to tell all of us to shut up.
Can you like... shut up.
You get an additional 10% off right now at thealexjonesstore.com on top of all the other big sales with promo code Hakeem. It's that simple. You know Hakeem Jeffries and the Democratic Party have been attacking us, attacking you, attacking President Trump, trying to bully us into submission, but it's not going to work. And the larger store sale that's going on right now is all of the Patriot t-shirts, the Patriot apparel, the widest selection, some of the best designs are 1997 in honor of myself and the crew launching Infowars.com in 1997, 28 years of the Infowar. So that is the Veterans of the Infowar sale. And on top of it, 10% off at checkout with the promo code Hakeem. And there's a bunch of limited edition Infowars, Veterans of the Infowars shirts, all the original designs and more. Because if Infowars is shut down and the bad guys get the name, they've said they're going to try to stop us from using the term Infowar in the future. But it's a generic term. It belongs in the world. They're going to try to misrepresent it with The Onion and Bloomberg, who are running all of this. It's going to blow up in their face big time. But regardless, for original InfoWars designs and these limited editions that help fund this operation and the future operation, the Alex Jones Network backup, it is critical to get these right now because it could be your last chance. It's all coming to a head right now. So thank you all for your support. You are veterans of the InfoWar, and I salute you all.
You're tuned in to The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. You know, I'm kind of stupid. No matter what happens at Supreme Court, no matter what happens in the legal realm, the only way we really go down is if we don't have your support. So I've been just so enraged at the Supreme Court failing to even consider our case that I've not been plugging this whole show, which is the way we go down. So if you want us to survive, no matter what the attack looks like and no matter what form it takes, please do support us at thealexjonesstore.com, and you can go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison. If you want to let them know who sent you, the 1997 mega sale is back, and we've made it even better. This week only, get all hats for just $19.97 in celebration of the InfoWars going on air for the first time in 1997. Premium hats are just $24.97. Plus, every dollar you spend this week gets you entered to win the Alex Jones Was Right tip jar full of 50 1-ounce Spartan silver rounds. And it doesn't stop there. Shilajit gummies are now 50% off no matter how many you buy. And of course, Shilajit gummy can help with your energy and stamina, muscle and recovery, immune system and detoxification, mood and stress reduction, cognitive and health, heart, as well as testosterone and vitality. It is a real gift from God, a superfood without comparison, except maybe Irish sea moss, which is also available, just not 50% off. So go now, 50% off Shilajit gummies. That was funny the way the thought Alex was sitting next to me for a second. It showed up right there. I'm like paranoid now from the time he scared the crap out of me last week. Folks, support Alex Jones. Support InfoWars. Show them that no matter what tricks they pull, they will not achieve their ultimate goal, which is to get us off the air and silence us. That's it. That's their ultimate goal. That is their brass ring that they're reaching for. Withhold it from them. Keep them from it by supporting us at thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com. We have the new veteran of the InfoWars line, which is very cool. You can win trucks. You can win sports cards. You can win jars full of silver coins. You get massive discounts on the best products in the universe. And if you sign up with the VIP club, everything is even better. So what reason is there not to support thealexjonesstore.com, support InfoWars, keep us on the air and in the fight? I got a lot of videos coming up about crime and about the interesting reaction to Trump releasing the dogs and putting the feds on the street to make up for the failure of local politicians to do anything to help the people in their districts. And we'll get to all of those here in just a second. We got a lot of other stories to get to, a lot of crime stories to get to. Obviously, the leftist violence is not just continuing, but accelerating in certain regards. Leftist terrorists are now openly threatening to kill Christians in the U.S. This is from, I think it's Father or Friar Calvin Robinson. Says, we received a death threat from an individual clearly suffering from some sort of demonic influence who turned up at church yesterday. Today we noticed this on the prayer garden door, and you've got this church with graffiti. The devil was here. F you. And they're getting even more and more bold. Today at the, where was it? Somewhere in Tennessee, the Fed building was covered in graffiti saying, we're coming for you. You know, you're next. According to Nick Sartor, the FBI has launched a full investigation into Antifa. And they spent the weekend calling journalists who have been victims of Antifa violence. I received a call from the FBI Sunday morning and confirmed others did as well. The Trump admin will take down this terrorist network. Yeah, well, we'll see. I guess we'll see about that. I also was talked to about the FBI months ago about some swatting incidents that were occurring. Haven't heard anything about that. Never got a follow-up. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. And then there's just story after story about just really the outrageous levels of crime in this country and how almost every single time, I mean, we should give out an award. I should offer like a $150 gift certificate to the Alex Jones store if you can show me an example of a violent, brutal crime from somebody with no criminal record. It's worth mentioning. Nobody starts with murder. They always work their way up to it. And there's plenty of times to intervene before it gets to the tragedy.
Why don't you just keep your mouth shut?
Oh, because you showed
up.
Is that the way to
you
talk?
You showed up. You voted.
You can extend it right now.
A permanent extension of massive tax breaks. Is that right?
90% of Americans take the standard deduction.
Is that right?
If you had your way, the standard deduction would have been cut in half. That would have been a massive tax increase on Americans.
Hakeem Jeffries, the Democratic Party, and the rest of the deep state want you and I to shut up. We're not going to shut up. That's why on top of the giant sale we've got going, Veterans of the InfoWar right now, you get an additional 10% off at checkout at thealexshowstore.com with promo code Hakeem. Because no, Hakeem, we're not going to shut up. And when Americans and others back InfoWars and this operation and what we're doing, they are literally defending the tip of the spear. This is the media operation the globalists and the left hate the most. We can't do this without your support. So please help keep us on the air and really say no to Hakeem Jeffries and the rest of these people by going to thealexshowstore.com for the best supplements, widest selection of Patriot apparel, and gear. Promo code Hakeem to get 10% off right now.
Welcome back, folks. Third hour of War Room is on. I think I'm going to open up phone lines for your calls. I haven't done that in a while, actually. Now that I think about it, I should. I must. We're going to open up the phone lines for your calls for this final hour. The number to dial is 1-877-789-2539. 1-877-789-2539. Give us a call. Let us know about what you think is going on. Let us know what you think about what is going on. However you want to arrange those words, it's fine with me. We have, like I said, a lot to talk about in the realm of crime. And I should go back and compile these stories, but it's a daily thing here. It's a quotidian exercise of mine to see headlines about people who have committed some sort of unspeakable crime, who have destroyed a life or destroyed many lives. And the story about how they were let out on bail for a dollar despite having 75 convictions in their past. 35 convictions in their past. I mean, it's a problem that is like so, it's weird, man. It's honestly weird. It's like you're sitting there going, you know, we should have some sort of like system of law. It's like you read these stories and you're like, do we not have a system of law? Do we not have a whole process where when somebody commits a crime, the police arrest them, and then they are given a trial, and then they go to jail. Like, do we not develop something like that? Like, why are we not using it? What are we doing here? Because people are losing their lives. People are having their lives destroyed by criminals that are being let out by judges who obviously don't give a damn about the well-being of the people who they've been empowered to protect. Truly crazy, some of these stories. And these are like they hit so close to home. And I remember saying after Jamie White was killed, God rest his soul, it's a matter of time, folks. It's a matter of time before it's you or one of your loved ones or one of your friends or coworkers. It's just a matter of time because this violence is touching everybody. It's reaching everywhere. And it's just a matter of time before your daughter, your husband, your brother, somebody is the victim of some horrific attack by some humanoid animal that we just keep letting out into the streets. So here's a story from my hometown. Here's a story that could have been any one of my friends or my family. Austin man forced a woman to perform oral sex at gunpoint inside her own home, pressing the barrel against her body and warning he'd kill her if she resisted. Dominique Rhodes had been waiting in the dark in gloves and a ski mask when two women, strangers to him, returned home from a birthday dinner. He ambushed them with a loaded Glock and held them hostage for hours. He bragged he'd killed before, shot a blonde woman multiple times, and said he wasn't afraid to do it again because he wore gloves and wouldn't leave evidence. He made both women drive to an ATM, demanded thousands, stole their wallets, phones, and laptop, then calmly reset the MacBook to wipe it clean before forcing the assault. One victim hid in a bathroom and whispered to 911 as Rhodes terrorized the other. This wasn't the first Austin armed robbery by the 28-year-old Killeen-based man. In September 2024, he robbed a Lyft driver at gunpoint at 7th Street in Red River, caught hiding in a recycling bin with the victim's credit cards and ammo in his pocket, arrested. Prosecutors let the indictment deadline lapse by 62 days Judge slashed his bond from $25,000 to $5,000. Case reduced from felony aggravated robbery to misdemeanor theft. Okay, so caught red-handed, literally hiding in a trash can with the evidence of the crime on him, and they don't put him away. They just forget to get around to it. They let the indictment lapse by 2 months and then lower everything down to a misdemeanor. He might as well have jaywalked. Okay, what happens next? April 2025, sentenced to time served with nothing else, 199 days, walked free that day. September 2025, robbed a Pflugerville smoke shop at gunpoint. That's a neighborhood in the north of Austin. Round chambered, mask on. Clark felt the barrel pressed into his back. Rhodes fled. No indictment before the next crime. Okay, so he robbed somebody at gunpoint, gets caught, gets let out. Robbed somebody at gunpoint again, doesn't get caught. October 2025, the home invasion and sexual assault mentioned above. SWAT pulled Rhodes from an attic with the Glock, 29 rounds, the victim's credit cards, the same ski mask. Now facing 9 new felonies, aggravated sexual assault, 2 counts of aggravated kidnapping, aggravated robbery, and more. Prosecutors once cut his armed robbery down to a misdemeanor. He used that freedom to terrorize 3 more victims, including a woman he sexually assaulted at gunpoint while threatening to kill her. And maybe now, if you know, we can really just pray to God, maybe now he'll go to jail for a little while. Maybe. We'll see. We'll see. And you just have count after count after count, conviction after conviction after conviction. And they let him out to do it again. And, you know, the very high crime of the 90s was, in a large degree, ended, massively reduced by things like stop and frisk and things like the 3-strike rule, which I think, frankly, is a little bit too generous. Maybe a 1-strike rule. Maybe 1 strike. Maybe the first time you put a loaded gun to a man's head and steal his wallet, maybe that's it for you. Maybe you've made your choice and you've decided to be killed by the state. And maybe that's just what needs to happen. And we need to reform death row. We need to reform, you know, prison in general. Because a lot of these guys don't even think of it as a punishment. I mean, their lives are so pathetic and miserable anyway. Going to jail is kind of like comforting. At least they get 3 meals handed to them. Then they don't have to walk down the road to the, you know, soup kitchen to get it. We need something. I mean, something needs to be done here. Something major needs to be done. Obviously, Trump is doing something in regards to putting soldiers on the street to actually make up for the utter lack of care that local governments show. But it's kind of another thing that you just think about this and you just go, how do we even solve this problem? Like, what? How did we get here? How do we solve this problem? Is it even really a problem? I mean, who is voting for the judges that keep letting people out? Who are the judges who just don't give a damn about letting violent criminals continue to terrorize the citizens that are under their protection? Well, why? Like, it just doesn't even make any sense at all. I just can't make sense of it. I can't understand how these people get into power. I can't understand how they stay in power, how people are okay with this. Like, you know, this isn't a theoretical thing. This isn't a difference of political outlook where we can have differences of opinion. Like, do you or do you not want to be murdered in your home? What? Like, what? This isn't a two sides argument. This is insane. Now, the good news is Trump is actually doing something about this. It is actually having an effect. And lo and behold, the lifelong Democrats are looking around and going, gee, we could have just stopped the crime at any point. Thank you, Trump, for stopping the crime. What I need on the back of the wall here, what I need just constantly displayed is the meme of the switch. The meme of the switch that I keep talking about, I don't know if we've ever shown it, but it is the most true meme to ever have been devised. And it's simply the fact that there's a switch to fix everything. It's the fix everything easily switch. And, you click it and everything gets solved, but we just can't click it for some reason. And this is genuinely how it feels covering politics in America today. There's the fix everything switch, and surrounding it are all these wonderful quotes. Oh, you're a switch pressing obsessed maniac. That's what it is. It's simply impossible to press the switch. We can't just press the switch. I mean, yeah, people say you shouldn't press the switch. You know, maybe you shouldn't. You know, hey, if people say you shouldn't press it, let's just not rock the boat, all right? To be honest, it's quite frankly terrifying that you would even consider pressing that switch. You know, it isn't easy. It's not as simple as just pressing a switch, okay? Hey, buddy, get effed if you're even thinking about pressing that switch. F you. You have this ridiculous fantasy where you can just press the switch. It's crazy. You know, the middle ground is let's not press the switch, all right? You want to. They don't want to. I think we can come to a compromise. We won't press it, okay? Because then what would all these people do? What would all these NGOs be getting all these billions of dollars for? No, it's literally as easy as pressing the switch. The switch in this case is punish crimes. Put police on the streets to catch criminals. Problem solved, folks. Like, it really is as simple as that. Let's go to some videos to show you the outcome of this button pressing. Trump has pressed the buttons in places like Memphis. Let's go to clip number 6 here. Memphis resident shocked at what his city has turned into since Donald Trump unleashed the Gestapo on the city streets. Let's watch.
Fool, I ain't even gonna care when I say this, bruh. But since they brought the National Guard down to Memphis, I ain't heard no screeching tires out late at night. I ain't heard no gunshots. These folks really putting belt to ass right now. That don't mean that crime ain't going on. But these folks really got these folks scared to go outside now. Like, this shit crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. No, it's pretty crazy. Let's go to clip 10 here. All I want to say is Trump's doing a good thing. Hey, there's children outside. What? What? There are American children playing outdoors? This must be fascism. Let's watch.
All I want to say is, Trump, you're doing your big thing, man. We got the kids back outside on their bikes. The lawnmower's back going. The dog's back barking. Memphis is looking real good out here, man. Hey, man, you did your big one, man. Appreciate you for helping cleaning up Memphis. Hey, MPD, well, I don't even know what to say about y'all. I done walked to the store. Y'all got me a bag of ice. Oh, I ain't walked to the store in about 20 years. You ain't got to worry about no pow, pow, pow. You ain't got to worry about no ducking. You ain't got to worry about them fins doing all that old shit. Man, it's beautiful. I'm talking about the traffic back going. Oh, I'm talking about the kids back outside. Hey, hey, make Memphis great again, goddammit. Hey, it's a good thing, man. I love when the plan come together. Hey, Tag Force, keep doing what you're doing. Hey, Trump, y'all keep doing what you're doing. National Guard, y'all keep doing what you're doing. Hey.
I mean, how crazy is that? And y'all know why they had the laughing voice behind it, but how crazy is that? Like, is this not a wake-up call to people? Where the guy is like, man, we got kids on bikes. I walk to the store to get ice. I can walk home. It's like, do people realize there are huge sections of America where you can't do that? Where kids can't go outside, they might die. Where if you want to go to the store, you got to like get in your car and drive out of your neighborhood to a different store to get something. Like, it's been so bad in the inner cities, and it's a deliberate choice that they're making. So Trump has flicked the switch and everybody's happy except for the criminals and the Democrats who love criminals for some inexplicable reason. I got more videos. You want to see more of these? Let's go to clip 5 here. Here's a character from Atlanta saying, hey, I'm seeing what you're doing in Memphis. You got to get to Atlanta next, sir. Let's watch.
This message is for Team Trump and the National Guards. Come to Atlanta. Come to Atlanta. Come to Atlanta next. I know y'all done cleaned Memphis up. I see so many videos of Memphis motherfucker happy. And as a homeowner, as a working man, as an entrepreneur, come to Atlanta. I beg of you. Get these YNs off the street. Get these water boys off the street. Come on. Because these males ain't doing shit. These motherfuckers doing shit. Trump. Come to Atlanta. National Guard. Come on. Get these young niggas out of here. Get these YNs out of here. Come on. Come on. National Guard, I see the work you doing in Memphis. I'm not one of them niggas. I'm a black man. I'm not a nigga. black man. I ain't like these other. I don't give a fuck about all what the nigga say. I care about me walking outside while walking my dog without having to walk with a pew pew. Bring Atlanta back. Bring old Atlanta back. Get rid of these YNs and these single mom raising them. So let's do it, Trump. Bring the National Guard to Atlanta and send them motherfuckers right down there by the goddamn Mercedes Benz dome. Let them sit right there all through West End. Stay on up through there, all through West End by the Krispy Kreme. Right there. Park it right there by the West End Mall. Get them all. Get them.
He's giving him instructions down to the block. Here's where you need to go, Trump. Here's where they all are. Take care of them. How can you not love that? How can you not love these videos? I played the other video yesterday on the Alex Jones Show. And it's mostly black people. It's mostly black because it's their neighborhoods that are unlivable. The woman yesterday is going, I can finally let my kids play in our own backyard. What? You can't let your kids play in your own backyard? You're not free. You're not a free person if you can't walk down the block safely. You're not a free person. You don't have liberty if you're under a constant state of threat. I love that. The guy's like, I'm not one of these YNs. I'm a homeowner. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a father. I don't need this. Get them out of my way. Let me thrive. Let my business succeed. Let my home's value raise. Let me enjoy my life without being constantly under threat or having to carry a gun. Clean up the streets. So that's somebody from Atlanta begging Trump to send the National Guard there. And why? Is Atlanta incapable of dealing with this? Are they short-staffed? Are they short-handed? Do they not have the police to handle this? No, it's a choice. They have made a choice. They've made a choice to allow these communities and allow these neighborhoods to collapse and dissolve into chaos and misery and death and murder and crime and violence and theft. They've allowed it on purpose. They have packaged your destruction as your liberation. And they've allowed criminals to become the authorities on your streets because they refuse to allow the actual authorities to take care of the criminals. Is this not obvious? And still to this day, you've got people who think that police presence anywhere is racism. It's just anything the Democrats want you to do, do the opposite. And everybody's happy. Even the Democrats, even the people who vote Democrat. Which, going by stats, everybody we've seen so far is probably a lifelong Democrat voter. But black people vote Democrat at like 90%+. And yet it's all black people that we're seeing going, hey, thank you, Trump, for sending the police in. So when the Democrats say defund the police, you should really be packing money into the police's coffers. When they say that policing is racist and we need police off the streets of these neighborhoods, those exact neighborhoods are the ones where you should be surging police forces. For the benefit of the non-criminals, this is so unbelievably obvious. But it's not just that stuff. It's stuff like illegal immigration. Here's Don Lemon. Let's go to clip one here. Talking to a Chicago resident. Don Lemon talking to a Chicago resident about illegal immigration. And we once again will observe the phenomenon of the leftist feigned stupidity. Their number one tool is acting stupid. Is acting like they can't figure out or don't understand what is evident to everybody with a brain. Let's go to clip number one now.
How do you feel about what's going on here?
I support it.
Why is that?
This is America, man. Got to do things the right way. That's it. Plain and simple.
What does that mean?
It means exactly what it sounds like. Got to do it the right way. You want to come here legally. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. How do you feel about due process?
You're getting into a sketchy line there you're trying to throw out.
I just asked you a question. How do you feel about due process?
I think due process is important in a lot of standings, but when you come down to the immigration, it's impossible.
This is so frustrating. Let's pause it. They have people convinced that due process means like a trial. Guys, listen to the words. Due process, the process which is due, the process that is due. The process that's due an illegal immigrant is swift kick in the butt on the way out the door. That's the due process. That is the due process.
The only process necessary is to determine if you have the right person. That's it. They don't have a right to defend themselves. They don't have a right to make an argument as to why they should be allowed in the country. If they're not allowed in the country, you arrest them. You confirm their identity is who you think they are, and then you deport them. That is the due process. And people don't understand that. Like, this guy is actually making a good argument, because what he's saying is it's impossible to give the tens of millions of people that were let in without due process, right? You're supposed to have a due process to get in to the country. What Don Lemon is actually advocating for here, and the ultimate irony, is a lack of due process for intake, but he wants ultimate over-processing to get people out. So the due process to get into this country is to apply for a visa or go through a port of entry or, you know, in some other way, be welcomed into our country by fulfilling the due process required. They didn't do that, but now they expect us to give them a criminal trial to expel them from the country. It's ridiculous. So the guy's making a good point, because it is impossible. We would be completely incapable of deporting anybody if we had to provide them all a lawyer or something ridiculous. That's, you know, what they're advocating for. And they're not, again, they don't care about due process. They just, it's something they can, it's a barrier. It's an obstacle to deporting people. They just want to slow the process down to limit the number of people being deported. This is all obvious. So you have to understand, due process just means the process that is due. The process that is due illegal immigrants is to be expelled from the country. That is the due process. Ridiculous. And we can go to one more video here. We can go to clip 15. We'll close out this segment and go straight to your calls on the other side. Clip 15, this is a Portland resident talking about what it's like to be terrorized day in and day out by a mob of Antifa that the authorities refuse to punish for their innumerable crimes. Let's watch.
Good. Is it loud in there at night?
Where?
In the, do you live here?
Yeah.
It's loud in there at night?
What you hear here is what you hear in that. It's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. What they're doing to these people here, they're people here that live, that have been in Iraq War and Desert Storm. Yeah. PTSD. You just see them shake in the elevator.
Oh, with PTSD.
And the little kids that with families walking through the elevator would be crying when the bombs covered all this stuff. But it's really not a fun picture. And all this hype is just making, I mean, could you imagine living in one of these? I know five of them
live
there.
No, I would throw a fit.
Oh, and they do, but there's nothing we can do about it. It's terrible. I mean, I see families and little kids crying, I just get pissed off.
And I mean, they're stuck in a lease, so there's not much they can do, right?
Oh, it's 4 o'clock in the morning goes off, everybody goes home, get rest, and they start back about 11 o'clock in the morning. It's just unfair.
Oh, so not like noise enforcement or anything?
Oh, the city council won't let them do noise enforcement. Before all this happened, the city council wouldn't let the police calm the curfews or anything here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, would you like to see the city council move forward with noise enforcement here?
Well, absolutely. These people, it's unfair for anybody in this building or the other one. Where's the other one? No, I guess this one. They've already shut the school down. They won't even let the kids do that daycare. Yeah. It's all full of, you know.
So I was curious because, you know, you do have apartments here and people live here, and I haven't talked to anybody.
People chill. Two families up there with kids that you see and are going down the hallway crying because of all the flash bombs going off all hours of the night. You know, it really is. I mean, it's not
really
what's going on.
That really is the key thing to understand. Mercy to criminals is to victimize the innocent. Why are regular law-abiding Americans continually forced to suffer under crimes because our authorities refuse to click the switch? Click the damn switch.
You're not going to talk to me and talk over me. Because you don't want to hear what I have to say.
Oh, I'm listening.
So why don't
go
you
ahead.
Just keep your mouth shut?
I've been on air for 31 years, but 28 years ago, I launched InfoWars, and it's changed the world thanks to all of your support of the operation. People like Hakeem Jeffries want us to shut up.
Can you, like, shut up?
That's what all their lawfare, all their lawsuits, all their attacks have been about, and they're passing anti-free speech laws in Canada, the UK, Europe. They're arresting people for even criticizing the government, and they're trying to bring that here. And that's why it's so important to try to keep InfoWars on the air. But regardless, these will be taken off very, very soon. we're going to continue on in the fight. But going forward, we'll no longer be called InfoWars. That's why it's so important now, which could be your last chance, to get all of the great shirts, ball caps, hoodies, sweaters, you name it, that have InfoWars on it. The classic designs and some of the new designs. That's why we're launching the InfoWars Veteran Edition, or Veterans of the InfoWar. All of you that supported the InfoWar, you are the InfoWar. You are the modern Paul Revere's. You're the reason we're having this massive success here in the United States and around the world. You're the reason the globalists are desperate and admit their entire system is collapsing down around them. We're winning major battles, but we've not yet won the main war. And I have been proud to fight with you over these decades. I am so blessed and satisfied by the incredible effect we've all had together. So to celebrate 28 years of the InfoWar, 1997 to 2025, which could be the end of this incarnation of it, and I hope we go on. And regardless, the InfoWar never dies. It belongs to the people. It's the term for information warfare. They use lies. We use truth. But the URL and this building and all of that goes away, and it's like rocket engines, boosters falling off as the main craft goes into escape velocity and orbit. As John Paul Jones famously said, the founder of the U.S. Navy, I have not yet begun to fight. But it is important to get original InfoWars gear while you still can. All the classic designs and the new Veterans of the InfoWar designs that are limited edition and help keep this operation on the air and fund the new Alex Jones network that's being built. We've already seen some of the studios, the great work the crew's been doing. But it's much more expansive than what you've seen, and that'll be revealed very, very soon. And that's thanks to all of your support. So when you go to thealexjonesstore.com, you will have access to the widest selection, over 500 designs of Patriot t-shirts, ball caps, hoodies, sweaters, you name it. And all of the t-shirts are $19.97 in honor of the year that I launched InfoWars.com. itself. So again, thank you all for your support. And there's more.
But wait, there's more!
With promo code Hakeem at checkout, because he wants us all to shut up, and we're not going to shut up, get an additional 10% off right now. That's promo code Hakeem. Use it now.
Oh, I'm listening.
So why don't
Go
you
ahead.
Just keep your mouth shut?
Hakeem Jeffries hopes you shut up. Hakeem Jeffries hopes you don't help keep us on the air, because then he can continue his tyrannical activity. That's why it's a revolutionary act when you support this operation and wear the Patriot apparel, available right now at thealexjonesstore.com, celebrating 28 years of the InfoWar. Thanks for keeping us on the air, and Hakeem, we've just begun to fight. We're not going to shut up.
Tree will get you nowhere. We are fighting to protect the health care of the American people in the face of an unprecedented Republican assault.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Folks, final segment of the War Room. I'm going to go out to your calls here momentarily. As much as I've talked about the Supreme Court case today, and I read this a little bit with Viva Fry, but when we have a guest on, I try not to spend too much time reading stuff. So I want to read this to you real quick, and then I'll go out to your phone calls. Because this is what I'm talking about. This, I think, is the key thing to understand when it comes to the case against Alex Jones, the defamation or the default judgment that occurred. This is why. Get a load of this, all right? Texas case, incomplete and delayed disclosures. This, according to Grok, is why we received a default judgment. We're not allowed to defend ourselves. Jones was ordered in 2019 and 2020 to produce financial records, web analytics like Google Analytics, and marketing data showing how InfoWars profited from Sandy Hook content. They wanted us to provide them evidence that we were guilty. By mid-2021, he turned over only sanitized or partial records, e.g. fragmented sales figures with no context about Sandy Hook-related revenue. Well, we don't have context about Sandy Hook-related revenue. We talk about all sorts of things. Our callers call in and bring something up. People go to the store sometimes. They don't go to the store other times. It just has no bearing on what we cover, how we cover it. So there's no internal document showing us comparing our sales to top. It just doesn't exist. Doesn't happen. Plaintiff's motions showed he ignore deadlines, producing nothing substantive despite extensions. Specific examples of withholding. The plaintiffs pointed to Jones's failure to provide full email records, social media metrics, or detailed website traffic data. For instance, in a June 2021 hearing, they argued he hadn't disclosed contacts or communications with advertisers tied to Sandy Hook broadcasts. What the hell does that mean? We haven't disclosed contacts with advertisers about Sandy Hook. We don't have advertisers. We don't have any contacts with advertisers. We have the Alex Jones store. Back then, we had the InfoWars store. We had maybe a gold person or whatever. But again, they're asking for something that doesn't exist. And then they're default giving us a default judgment when we don't provide the records that don't exist. I'm telling you, and you can watch the depositions on YouTube, and they are constantly asking these types of questions. There's one instance where I think it was when Jones saw the footage of Anderson Cooper and his nose disappears. And so Jones says, that looks like green screen to me. And in the deposition, they're going, where did Jones get that idea? And Robbie's like, what? It's his idea. And they're like, but where did it come from? And he's like, do you mean the video? And they're like, yeah, where'd the video come from? And he's like, from CNN. And they're like, so CNN said that this was green screen? And it's like, no, you idiots. The video was from CNN. Then Alex saw it and said that looks like green screen because he's worked with green screens before. But they refuse to understand that and just keep asking for the source of that claim. And it's like, there is no, it doesn't exist. And so they're like, all right, we'll move on. It's like, okay, what? Over and over again, it was this type of thing. Where did the source of that come from? The video that we watched? Well, okay, but where is the real source? No, there. It was just us. It's just what we just say things that we think, we observe, and then we relate. It's like relentless. All right, so it continues. In the Connecticut case, starting in 2019, the Connecticut plaintiffs demanded similar records, financial statements, Google Analytics, and internal communications about Sandy Hook content. Doesn't exist. Jones's team, including early counsels like John J. Woolman, missed deadlines. Produced heavily redacted or irrelevant documents. Well, because we presented everything, and it's just what they asked doesn't exist. So they say it's irrelevant. Okay, but these are the documents that we have. They have to be relevant. The plaintiffs argued Jones provided demonstrably false excuses. For example, his team claimed Google Analytics weren't available due to his 2018 Google ban, but didn't explain why historical data pre-ban wasn't preserved or why alternative traffic logs weren't offered. Again, we are kicked off of Google Analytics. We lose access to that entire back end. And even if we did, InfoWars doesn't work like most media companies. And I think that might have been one of the issues, is like they're treating us as if we're the New York Times, who would have entire departments, you know, dedicated to collating or, you know, figuring out which stories do well and talking to advertisers and all. It doesn't exist here. You got the crew that produces the show. I gather all the news. It's all freeform. It's all spur of the moment, edge of the seat. I mean, that's how we do things. There's no law against doing things that way. Then they go in and say, well, where's your internal communications where you talk about how covering Sandy Hook gets you more money? What? That doesn't exist. Oh, you're withholding that, are you? Default judgment. We own your life now. That's literally what happened, all right? And I can keep going and going, but I mean, it's in black and white right there. The plaintiff showed Jones provided excuses. They said, we were kicked off Google Analytics, don't have that. Kicked off YouTube, don't have that. They punished us for it. Alternative traffic logs, like whatever. We don't pay attention to that stuff. A forensic accountant hired by the plaintiffs, they were incomplete, saying that the financial records were incomplete and unreliable because they missed revenue breakdowns tied to Sandy Hook. So not to belabor the point, but I mean, that is literally why we were declared in default. Because they demanded that we give them documents that did not and do not and never did exist. Tying our revenue to our Sandy Hook coverage. Not how we do things here. And if we did have that, then that would have proved their case. What they're asking was, give us information that shows you lied in order to make money, because we're suing you for lying in order to make money. So give us evidence of that. We say it doesn't exist. We don't have evidence of that. And they say, well, you're withholding evidence, default judgment. Either give us things that prove you're guilty or we will declare you're guilty. Tip of the iceberg, folks. You can, every development in these cases has been absurd. Absurd. I can think of 20 different examples of just unprecedented, ridiculous nonsense that happened even before the trials happened and the, you know, we went into bankruptcy. And then you get into the bankruptcy situation with the fake auction and the lying about it on TV. And I mean, just, it's like too much. It's like an infinite, and it's like a fractal pattern. Like you can just keep zooming in and zooming in and zooming in. And there's just more and more corruption the further you look. It's disgusting. The Supreme Court won't even take a look at it. Ridiculous. Let's go to Charlie in Tennessee on line four. Charlie in Tennessee on free speech. Go ahead, Charlie. You're on the air.
Hey, good to talk to you. And I'm just concerned because it seems like we're being forced into this digital gulag and everything just flips so fast. I mean, you can't speak the truth anymore like you're saying, and you'll get caught up in a civil court where you got to prove you're innocent. And you'll just get tied up and buried in lawfare, for one thing. So it's kind of distressing.
Well, and it's civil cases in some cases, but in some cases it's the government running those civil cases, like with ours, with the FBI being caught on hidden camera, the CIA and FBI by James O'Keefe saying, yeah, we're going after Alex Jones. We couldn't get him this way, so now we're going to sue him. And it was an FBI agent that organized all of it and got this all in motion anyway when we never even mentioned his name, and he shouldn't have been allowed to sue us on that basis at all. So, yeah, it's kind of scary, isn't it, Charlie?
It's a giant RICO scam, and you're wondering what happened to this country. They took the men out of the family and took the prayer out of the schools. Nobody can speak the truth anymore. I mean, I feel like they just took Jesus Christ out of Turning Point USA. I mean, it's weird things going on out there. So, well, speak the truth.
And it's especially troubling for me, and I guess we just keep learning this lesson. Like, I feel like I, you know, it's almost like PTSD from like January 6th where – like I was having dreams of the FBI like kicking in my door and like shooting my dog. Like for a long time, felt very safe to be on InfoWars, felt very safe to speak your mind because it was like, hey, you know what? I'm not calling for violence. I'm not lying. I can say whatever the hell I want. We have the First Amendment in this country and I'm going to use it to its fullest extent. It suddenly doesn't feel like that anymore. I got family members that are like, aren't you worried? And I'm like, what would I be worried about? I don't lie about people. I don't support violence of any sort. You know, why would I worry? It's like, well, here's why. They can destroy your life over some ridiculous claim that you never even made. So it's like, it's not even safe to not, you know, speak out of turn. Even just being a figure now, they can just say you peed on a grave. And it's like, well, you don't even have to do anything anymore. You just have to be a target of them. And there's no defense. It's horrifying. And easily fixable. We could press the switch at any point and just have somebody with some ounce of logic in their brain look at what happened and go, this is wrong. I'm undoing this. That should be the Supreme Court. That's literally the entire reason the Supreme Court exists. Only they're busy, I guess. Thanks for the call, Charlie. Let's go to Omar in California. Go ahead, Omar. You're on the air.
Hey, Harrison. How you doing? Hey, I really think that we're not going to get anything done relying on, like, politicians way up there. Like, we really need to get into the local government. And it's most of the time, it's really easy to get in. Like, it's just people don't bother, you know. And for evil to succeed, it takes good men to stand down and do nothing at all. And I really think we should consider, like, who's our real enemies, because every time we bring up the subject about Muslims or Arabs, the word terrorist always comes up. Meanwhile, Israel is in every department agency in America, like, infiltrating our country and, you know, blackmailing our politicians. And meanwhile, we just, all we do is talk bad about Muslim countries when they all they want is peace. Honestly, I've been to Yemen a few times, and I have not met one Yemeni person that hates America. Everybody loves America, man. It, And I've been listening to Alex for 15 years, and it's kind of frustrating, you know, to hear certain things that he says about Muslims. And I support Alex. I love him, man. I don't know. He really, I think you should consider, like, you know, just thinking about what he's saying about Muslims. And, you know, but I get
where you're coming from, Omar, but like there's honestly, you know, there's a lot of Muslim enclaves in this country that are very aggressively, you know, working to gain political power, in order to benefit themselves. And, you know, in some cases it's like the Somali community, and it's even less about them being Muslim. I think it's about them being a sort of ethnic conclave that, votes for themselves and, you know, is expanding their power pretty ruthlessly. I mean, it feels as a white American, as an American who has no other home and no other homeland and whose family's been here since the Mayflower, it feels like we're surrounded in a lot of ways. And it feels like you're right. It's like we got Jewish people on top weaponizing systems for their own ends. Part of that is bringing in Muslims. And then so you've got, you know, millions of Muslims coming in. That's sort of the, you know, coming up from the bottom, and then you got Jews down on the top, and then you've got just like, you know, black people advocating for their stuff and hating white people. And it's just like, we're just attacked from every angle. And so it's not even necessarily about like disliking, for me, it's not about disliking Muslims or, you know, wanting anything bad from them, but it's about seeing my country being taken over by people with foreign values, foreign religions, and little, if any, respect for my culture and my country that they're moving into. So, you know, it's just, it's a different force, but like, I don't have a problem personally both loving these groups and not wanting them to have power in America or power over me. I got nothing against Muslim people. I've been very, very good friends with a lot of Muslim people in my life, but you look at something like, you know, the epic neighborhood in, you know, outside of Dallas, and it's like, why are there a million Muslim people creating a like Sharia law compliant neighborhood in my country? I don't need to allow that. And doesn't mean I hate those people or even dislike those people, but I don't need to allow that. And then I'm told I'm hateful for opposing it. Does that make sense?
Yes. Hey, I have a fun fact to warn you guys about California. Hey, I used to go to this family food market that was like all American. It was pretty cool. I actually loved it, man. They sold fat steaks, you know, big fat ribeye steaks, tomahawk steaks. And it was like the only store or food market that would sell those big steaks. And one of my cousins, an Arab guy, Yemeni guy, bought it because he has a lot of money. And they completely changed it to a Mexican market. And I can't get ribeyes over there anymore. All they sell is those paper thin steaks that make
fajita meat. Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you know, again, I think you're right. Like, my experience has also been that people love America around the world. They don't like when America is working on behalf of Israel or just, you know, stomping all over the sovereignty of countries around the world. And nobody in America wants or benefits from that, right? So it's like, we actually all have kind of the same enemies. And if America would stop being controlled by these ruthless monsters that use us to wage wars overseas, there's no reason why people from all over the world wouldn't love America. And like, they still do, even after everything we've done. So like, we're really just screwing ourselves over by, you know, getting ourselves wrapped up in these conflicts that genuinely have nothing to do with us. And I want to play a video here because I think this is part of the issue. And we see this everywhere that a large number of Muslims gather. Clip 20 here. Ontario schools in Canada have had an influx of Muslim migrants that are now telling the white people, you have to stop packing bacon in your lunch. And it's like, okay, is this a big deal? Is this really like the end of the world? No, I guess not, but it's another restriction. It's another imposition. It's another demand that you take consciousness of their, you know, way of life, but they get to ignore yours and run roughshod over yours. So it's just, it's a million little violations like this, a million little squeezing. We're just squeezed and squeezed and squeezed and squeezed until we just don't exist anymore. And so I think it's perfectly valid to be against that and to, And look, it's the same thing with everybody. Like, God bless Mexico. I love Mexico. I love my Mexican neighbors. They're out having fiestas every single day and playing mariachi music and kids running around and little kids in dresses and little suits going to quinceañeras. It's a beautiful culture. It's not my culture. It's not my culture. If I want to go to Mexico, I'll go to Mexico. But when I'm sitting there on Christmas Eve reading my kids the night before Christmas and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. And then, boom, a firework goes off outside my window because Mexicans celebrate Christmas with fireworks. Like, what the hell? You know, so it's like constantly there are these foreign cultures coming in and just like shoving our culture out of the way. And they have no respect or consideration for our culture. So we don't need to stand for it. And if there's shared respect, then we can do that. Then we can share respect and we can say, hey, you have your way, I have mine, and we can work together and not have, you know, a crisis here, not a friction here. But the way it always plays out is the white people, the Christians, the Anglos, whoever it is, get crushed and all of the newcomers get everything they want. And the consequence of that is obviously our country becomes their country. What was our country becomes where they came from. So why would we have to accept that? Let's go to clip 20 here. And I'm not, Omar, you seem like a great guy and you understand all this. I'm not yelling at you, but it's just this constant frustration that Native Americans, people who are native to America and Europe, constantly feel this imposition on us, this curtailing of our culture for the benefit of everybody else. So let's go to clip 20 here. Just an example, not demonizing the Muslims, but they demonize us, and it's, you know, we don't have to take this. Let's go to clip 20.
Imagine receiving an email from your kid's school teacher asking you not to pack pork in their lunches anymore because it has become offensive to some of the children who are in the class. Some parents are writing emails to the teachers saying that there are Canadian kids showing up with bacon and ham in their sandwiches, and that's offensive to their religion. Just imagine that for a second. It's a school, not a refugee camp. There's an airplane.
And the same thing happens here in Austin, not the bacon thing, but like in Austin, one of the best elementary schools, Travis Heights Elementary, had such an influx of like Afghan refugees that they teach class in Pashtun now. So all of the American kids that live in that neighborhood are just being taught as if they have to learn English for the first time. You've got third graders learning how to spell dog. And it's like, why, again, are our people being disadvantaged for other people that bring nothing to the table? It's not like, and it would be different if it's like, oh, you know, Afghans are moving in and they're bringing all their wealth with them and they're building these great things. But no, it's all off government subsidies. It's all off our tax dollars. And we're the ones who get screwed over constantly. Why do we have to take this? This is ridiculous. I think, Omar, and I'm glad you stayed on the line. I want to give you the final word here, but I think, like, we need to find the little bits of each religion and go, you need to use that for us. Like, Muslims, for some reason, get to speak out against transgenderism. Christians will get, and there was an example of this where three kids got in trouble for a hate crime against transgender people. Two of the kids were Christian. They got suspended. Another kid was Muslim and he didn't get punished because they said, well, that's his religion. Well, it's the Christian kid's religion too, but it's not respected. So like, okay, Muslims can help us get rid of transgenderism because they have a shield. They can actually talk about that stuff. Maybe Jews can help us out with the whole like border security, like nationalism thing. They seem really good at that when it's Israel. Why don't you help America achieve that level of unity and cohesiveness? We could come together on those topics. But do you see what I'm saying, Omar? I mean, again, the frustration, I think, is valid. Would you agree?
I totally understand. I think the problem is that, you know, the Americans, I believe for about maybe the 70s, 80s, and 90s, just went into guilt mode, and they just stopped, fighting back or, you know, standing up for them. Because I see sometimes in our stores, white people just like scared to defend themselves, and it's like, brother, just be yourself. It's okay, man. You don't have to be, you know. Like, say I'm an American, I want some goddamn pork. Just like, stop being so scared, you know.
It is our fault. It's completely our fault. It 100%. We are letting this happen. We are letting ourselves be walked over. We have been convinced it's bad to defend ourselves. You're 100% right, Omar. See, this This is why I'm not afraid of talking about this stuff, because good people of any race, color, creed, religion, everybody gets this. And people who are not hateful also see what's happening to white people and go, you guys need to stand up for yourselves. I love it. Thank you very much for the call, Omar. I appreciate it.
Love you guys, man.
Thank you. I do appreciate that. Thank you so much. Let's go to Tim in Washington State. Wants to talk about the failure of the Supreme Court, the willful failure. Tim, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, it's pretty tragic that the establishment has been spending all this money to try to bedazzle us into trusting them again after they just got done hitting us with bioweapons, and then they just stomp on free speech without even batting an eye. I'm pretty disappointed. In fact, I'm disappointed in myself for thinking that we were going to be able to use the politicians and the establishment to somehow survive this New World Order West future. They're all in on it, ladies and gentlemen. They're all in on it. So if you don't have $1 billion in your pocket, you're pretty much effed. What are we going to do, Harrison? What are we going to do?
Hard to disagree with that. Hard to disagree. And it's not to say that there aren't some good things happening, right? Like yesterday, it was all white pills with, you know, all this great stuff happening. But then something like this happens. And again, it's just this like awareness of just how surrounded we are, and not just about, you know, migrants or foreigners controlling us or, you know, taking advantage of us, but just how every institution has these little weasels that are controlling things. Every court has a judge that is just a flagrant partisan. And it's just like, how do we, what level of purge do we need to get to? You know, it's like reading RFK Jr.'s book, The Real Anthony Fauci. And you read that and it's like, that's 40 years of corruption in the medical industry, 40 years of people trained by corrupt forces in the medical industry. So it's like, how do we untie this knot? This is a knot that's been tangled for 40 years and every year it gets more tangled. It's like at a certain point, you need the Gordian knot. You just need to cut it and go, there's no fixing this system. There's no saving this system. It's lost. It's gone. It's inadequate. It's incapable of reforming itself. What else can we do? What other thing can we create to bring about justice? And that is going to be the ultimate answer, right? What I've been warning about forever. It's going to hurt. It's going to hit a certain level where people are going to recognize it is not a valid gamble. It's not a intelligent gamble to go with the court. There's going to be enough examples of people being let off and, you know, they forget to file the court case, so the guy gets let out on bail. There's going to be a certain point when you find the guy that just put a gun to your head and robbed you in your Lyft, when you find him hiding in a trash can, you don't hand him over to the police. You're just going to shoot him in the head and take your stuff, because at a certain point, we don't have to live with injustice. We don't have to live as victims. We have a system that's supposed to protect us. If it doesn't, it doesn't mean we have to be victims then. We just will create a new system, or it'll just be us. And that looks like chaos.
Hakeem Jeffries, the petty tyrant, wants you to shut up.
Why don't you just keep your mouth shut?
He doesn't want you to have free speech. He doesn't want you to be able to exercise your views and stand up for yourself. That's because he, like other tyrants in the EU, Canada, the UK, the Democratic Party, can't win with their ideas that are so unpopular. They can only silence people. So in honor of him trying to tell all of us to shut up.
Can you like shut up?
You get an additional 10% off right now at theAlexJonesStore.com on top of all the other big sales with promo code Hakeem. It's that simple. You know Hakeem Jeffries and the Democratic Party have been attacking us, attacking you, attacking President Trump, trying to bully us into submission, but it's not going to work. And the larger store sale that's going on right now is all of the Patriot t-shirts, the Patriot apparel, the widest selection, some of the best designs are 1997 in honor of myself and the crew launching Infowars.com in 1997, 28 years of the Infowar. So that is the Veterans of the Infowar sale. And on top of it, 10% off at checkout with the promo code Hakeem. And there's a bunch of limited edition Infowars, Veterans of the Infowars shirts, all the original designs and more. Because if Infowars is shut down and the bad guys get the name, they've said they're going to try to stop us from using the term Infowar in the future. But it's a generic term. It belongs to the world. They're going to try to misrepresent it with The Onion and Bloomberg, who are running all of this. It's going to blow up in their face big time. But regardless, for original InfoWars designs, and these limited editions that help fund this operation and the future operation, the Alex Jones Network Backup, it is critical to get these right now because it could be your last chance. It's all coming to a head right now. So thank you all for your support. You are veterans of the InfoWar, and I salute you all.